Recording it?
Yes, okay, so this is a chazara of a Baba Basra. We're going to try to cover highlights of each blot of a Baba Basra over the course of the next 90 minutes, so everybody hang on to your hats. Okay, Daf Beis. Kulan Ezekin Chadim Mesechtehi. Tosos starts off with that observation, but Tosos asks, we still have to explain why the Mesechta that we call Baba Basra follows the Mesechta that we call Baba Metzia. So Tosos explains, because the last parak of Baba Metzia covered Habayis V'Haliyah, was talking about if you have a house where the bottom story belongs to one person and the top story belongs to another person, it falls down. So then they split all of the wood. And here too, this parak speaks about Hashutfin. It speaks about partners. The first daf addresses the concept Hezek Re'iyah Shmei Hezek. That the Mishnah says, Hashutfin Sharatzu Lasus Machitza V'Chatze Bonin Es HaKotel. When the Shutfin decide that they want to make a Machitza, why do they have to decide? Because the Rabbi Yochanan says in Dav Gimel, we're talking about a Chatzir that doesn't have Dalet Amos Pe'icha, so therefore they on their own decide they're going to split it up. But then Bonin Es HaKotel, they according to the Manda Amar, that Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek, that the damage of watching the other person is considered to be damaged, there's a right of privacy of some sort, then that's why it says Bonin Es HaKotel, there's an obligation that they have to build the kotel. And then the Mishnah goes on, Machin Begina. So too, this is true with a garden. The Gemara in Daf Beis explains that the garden issue is not so much that each person is going to watch the private activities of the other person, which will be Hezek Riyah, but is more a concern of I and her. Because Rav says, person shouldn't look at the field of their friend while it is growing crops. And the Rashbam explains, Shalom Yisikeno be Ayin Ra, so that he not be harmed through Ayin Ra, so the neighbor not be harmed. That brings us to Daf Gimel. Daf Gimel, once we're speaking about this building, that we're supposed to build things, and we're speaking about what happens if something is destroyed and has to be rebuilt. So the Gemara in Daf Gimel Mabe speaks about the Stiris Basic Nesses, and says, Amar Pistol, Lister Inish Bekanishta, the Bani Bekanishta Akarisi, should not destroy one Bek Nesset until you build a different base Knesset. Ika de Ami, some say Mishum Shiusa, because you might be negligent, not build it. Ika de Ami Mishum Sliye. And some say because you have to replace the Dabin. Might be Nayo, what's the Nafkamina between those two opinions? Ika Minayo, to Ika Be Knishta Acharisi. The Nafkamina would be if there's another place to pray. So then you don't have to worry about Saluye, but you do have to be worried about Shiusa. The Gemara on Dab Dalit speaks about Hordus. Hordus was an Evid from Base Kashmanai, but he took it upon himself to destroy all of the nobles within Beis Kashmonai and to take over the kingdom and to be the king himself. He killed all of the rabbis because he said they're the ones who darshin mikerev achecha tasim alecha melech, that a melech has to be from somebody who is born Jewish with good lineage, and he was born as an Evid, and therefore he was angry at all the rabbis. He left one rabbi, and that was Baba ben Buta. He saw that Baba ben Buta was a very honorable person. He wouldn't speak badly about Hordus, even after he blinded Baba ben Buta, and Baba ben Buta didn't know who was speaking to him. So he asked, what my takante? What should I do now that I killed all the rabbis? My takante darogaba, and Baba ben Buta said, hukava o shalom, that you destroyed the aura, the light of the world, and therefore, yasuk o shalom, you should build the Beis HaMikdash, which is considered machman eni the Oro Shel Olam. And the Gemara says, Mishlova binyan Hordus, Lova binyan Name Miyamav. Somebody did not see the Beis HaMikdash built by Hordus. They did not see any beautiful building in their life. It was such an incredibly beautiful building. The Mishnah on Daf Gimel Amud Beis speaks about that if there is somebody who builds walls in the middle of their property, and there's somebody else who has a separate domain within the middle of their property. So when this person is building the walls, they are encircling this other individual, and therefore this other individual is gaining from it. But let's say they only built three walls. And then the other person doesn't have to contribute. But once they build a fourth wall, so Rabbi Yossi Omer, and the way that we assume is what either the person who originally builds the fourth wall, or the individual on the inside builds the fourth wall. Either way, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Im Amad Begadar Es Harabias, if the fourth wall is built, Magagalin Olav is a call, so then the person who is now benefited, even though he didn't build anything and didn't ask for it, but he has this protection around this property, he also has to contribute for half of the cost of the wall. The Gemara in Daf Heyman Alf tells the story of Runya Akvei Ravina Me'abar Bukhosav. That Runya had such a situation in which his property was completely encircled on all sides by Ravina, who built four walls around the property of Runya, and Ravina wanted Runya to cooperate, to contribute. So Runya did not want to contribute because he said, I don't need this. So then Ravina told his sharecropper to take some dates from a tree that grew on Runya's property, and Runya got very upset. So he said, ah, see, you do want some protection because this is why it's good for you to have the walls. So they went in front of Rava to decide the case, and Rava said, Amalei Zil Faise. He said to Runya that you had better pay something in order to appease Ravina, but my defias, the amount that will cause him to be appeased, we load that in an al chab dina kravuna. And if not, then I will cause you to have to pay like Ravuna. Ravuna, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yossi. What did Ravuna say? Ravuna said, we pass him like Rabbi Yossi, that the person who benefits has to contribute, and not only that, but he has to contribute half according to the cost of whatever wall was built. So if it was a very sturdy wall and it was expensive wall, he would have to pay half of that entire cost. So therefore, it would be better for him to work out a pshara. The Gemara at the end of the daf, and daf Heyam and Aleph, speaks about the dinner of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says that if there is a set time for a borrower to pay a loan to the lender, and the borrower says, I already paid it, but within that time before it became due, Eino Neman. He is not believed. He is not believed even to the degree, the Gemara says in Amun Beis, to the degree that if there was such a loan that was owned by orphans, because the father had not paid up before he died, then the creditor would be allowed to collect without even taking a shavua. However, Tosis points out this is only when there was a set time to the loan. If it's stamava, if it's a regular loan, even though we say stamava shloshim yom, person said that he paid within the 30 days, he would in fact be believed. That brings us to Daf Vav. Daf Vav speaks about if a person makes a cheskas tashmishin, a person has a chazak on somebody else's property to use that property for their benefit. Amar Rav Nachman Aksik the Hordi, that one neighbor uses the other neighbor's wall to put small objects on it. Aksik the Kashure, that's not considered a chazaka to put large objects on it. How did this person get a chazaka in the first place? So the Rashi over here says he has the chazaka based on having a taina. He has to have some sort of a taina that the person who owns the wall either sold him this right or he gave it this right as a gift. However, it does not require 3 years in order to acquire this right. Others in Mukhe Yosef quotes various Rishonim say that it does require 3 years to acquire this right, just like it would take 3 years to acquire right to real property. And others say that it does not require a taina at all, just the mere fact that the neighbor who owned the wall didn't say anything would be good enough. That's what the Rambam seems to indicate in Hilchos Shkenim. That brings us to Dab Zion. Dab Zion talks about if we have, for example, the following situation where a person has a tax. There's a tax. If there's a tax in the land, there's a tax in the city, do the rabbis have to pay the tax? So Amar Reish Lakish, Rabbanan Latzrikin and Tirusa, the rabbis don't have to pay the tax for a building of a wall. Why don't they have to pay a tax for the building of the wall? Because of the fact that Rabbanan Latzrikin and Tirusa, because Rabbanan, since they're protected through Talmud Torah, therefore they don't require Shmira, so they do not need to contribute to the tax. So the Gemara in Daf Ches Amud Aleph continues this theme, and the Gemara says that this is true and it can be proved from Psukim in the Torah, and Psukim in the Navi, and Psukim in the Ksuvim as well. Then the Gemara in Daf Ches Amud Aleph on the bottom says, "Ein posin staka al hayisomim," that we do not stipulate that yisomim, that orphans have to pay a staka, even if it is a very important staka like pinyon shvuyim, and we say, but pinyon shvuyim is the most important. So what do we see from this? Shema mina pinyon. We see from this that Pinyan Shurim is considered to be a mitzvah rabbi, that it's specifically singled out as like the most important stalker, so it must be a mitzvah rabbi. The Gemara later on Ches Amud Bey says, V'shayim b'nei il ha'asos l'midos al-sha'arim, various merchants can make various rules regarding what the measures are supposed to be like, what the prices are supposed to be like, askar po'alim, and how much you're supposed to pay the laborers, minimum wage, things like that. And if not, everybody necessarily goes along with it. Nonetheless, everybody is required to follow what is sort of the majority rule that was established by the leaders of the city, that they can impose penalties on those who do not listen to them. Another important principle that we have here in Chesam and Alf is that the Gabayim, if you have Gabayim Stokka, Enem Ashayim, the Foch, Demizep, we have people collect Stokka and they're not allowed to separate from each other because it would otherwise create, as Rashi says, a Kshad, because each one would say that, oh, the other one is collecting more than they're supposed to because they're trying to steal, therefore we have them in pairs. And finally, we're told about a great mechanic, Shmuel Bashelas, who did not leave his Tamidim for many, many years, who said that he went to check his crops, and Rav Shmuel Bar Shelas said, or to the person who accused him that he was leaving his rab, found Rav Shmuel Bashelas, and says, you're not attending to your charges. And he said, 13 years I haven't checked my crops, and even now I'm thinking of my tzomidim. Daf Tes says that let's say that you do have a case. It speaks about a case where there are two slaughter butchers that made a deal between them each one who would slaughter in the day that belonged to their friend, so they would lose their skin, lose the skin of the animal that they had slaughtered. And one person did this, and the other person imposed the penalty. But Rava said, no, that other person has to pay for damages. Why is that? Can't the merchants make their own rules? Like we just said, that's only if there's no Adam Chashuv in town. But when there's Adam Chashuv, but if there is an Adam Chashuv, then they have to check with the Adam Chashuv before they can stipulate any rules. Fine. And the Gemara in Daf Tes Amud Beis says that when one gives the mitzvah tzedakah, it's talking about the mitzvah tzedakah. So it says when one gives the mitzvah tzedakah, it is very important to give to, in order to fulfill the mitzvah, you have to give to people who are really poor and not people who are deceiving you. And that's why Yirmiyahu prayed that his enemies should be punished, that when they give tzedakah, that they should be presented with people who are really fraudsters, so that they won't get the scar, they won't get the reward for giving tzedakah. Daf Yud tells a story about Tonas Rufus and Rabbi Akiva. Tonas Rufus asks, why are you providing for the poor when God wants to punish them like they're slaves? And Rabbi Akiva says, because we view ourselves as banim l'malkum, as children to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tonas Rufus says, but that's only when you're doing God's will. Rabbi Akiva responds, no, we have a pasuk in Yeshayahu that says that we are supposed to peros the rab lachmecha v'anim rudim to be biased, that we even when there are difficult times and we're not doing God's will, we're supposed to give stock up to the poor people. That is what God wants. And the Gemara says further that ko amar Hashem shimu mishpat v'asut stokah ki krova Yeshua si lavo v'tzik asi legalos. If you give stock up, that brings the geula. Very important principle at the end of Yudam and Aleph. Rabbi Eliezer, Yai Putulani Mahadamatsli. Rabbi Eliezer would give tzedakah to the poor person, and then afterwards he would daven Shmoneh Esrei. The Ksiv, Ani Metzedek HaKazeh Panecha, as it says in Tehillim, that in order that first you're going to give tzedakah, and then Echazeh Panecha, and then you're supposed to daven. So you see, you're supposed to give tzedakah first, and then you say Shmoneh Esrei. Daf Yudam and Beis, tells the story of somebody, Yosef, prayed to Rabbi Yeshua, that he passed out, and he saw the next world, and his father said, what did you see? And he said, Olam HaHofel Choisi, I saw an upside down world. The people who are up in this world, El Yonim Lamato, are down in that next world. The Takhtonim, those who are down in this world, Lamalo, are up in the next world. So Amalei, so his father said, Olam Barari Isa, you saw a clear world. That's the way it's really supposed to be. The people that we think are up are really down. People that we think are down are really up. So who is valued in that world? So he said, I heard them say, Ashimi Shibolo Kanma Tamuta Biyado, that it is somebody who comes with his Talmud in his hand, such a person is valued in the world to come. The Gemara and Daf Yud Aleph, an Aleph that tells the story about the Binyamin Atzad. Binyamin HaTzadik was such a faithful gabbai that when he didn't have enough money to give to the poor people, he took from his own money. And therefore, he was called Shimon HaTzadik, that because of him, he caused the woman and her seven children not to die because he took it out from his own money, and he was rewarded with 22 extra years that were added to his lifetime. The Gemara on Yud Alef Amud Beis tells the story about neighbors. Now we're getting back to the rules about different neighbors and their rules. So every single neighbor is entitled to certain entrance ways that they're allowed to open up to the chatzer. What are some somebody closed his entrance way, he can reopen it as long as he has not been paritz as petzimah, as long as he has not removed the doorpost. If the doorpost is still there, then he can open it up again. That brings us to Daf Yud Beis. Daf Yud Beis tells us the principle that Meitzer Shekzikibo Rabim Asu L'Kalkalo, that if I have a shortcut that the general community has taken advantage of in somebody's property, so then Asu L'Kalkalo, then it's something which they're entitled to keep, it's something which remains there. The Gemara in Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph at the bottom tells us Miyam Shkar Beis HaMikdash Nitla the Nebuah from the time the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Nebuah was taken away from the prophets and was given to the wise men, to the rabbis. We say the rabbis are to the wise, to the Talmidei Chachamim. The pasuk says, "V'Navi l'Baal Chachma," that V'Navi is compared to a Chacham. Minis l'Alamid b'Mi Avei Omer Katzan Nisla B'Gadol. That a Chacham is considered to be Gadol. It's a person who's a big time. A Chacham is considered to be on a higher level, on some fundamental level. The Gemara in Amud Beis says that the Nebuah was taken away from the Nebiim and was given to Shoshim the Tinokos. That Shoshim, that people who are imbeciles, they don't have tremendous das per se, and tinokos and small children, they don't necessarily know anything, so there are words of wisdom that are placed into their mouth. Therefore, they're the ones who have this type of nevuah. The Gemara in the bottom of Yud Beis Amud Beis tells the story, tells about Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Yosef is of the opinion, and if there is somebody who has a certain property, and then the father died, or some say the father-in-law died, and all of and he and his brothers inherited land, including land that was next to the property that he already owed, that he'd already owned. So he wants to say that he should get that land because that's only fair that he should get a land that's adjacent to land that he already has. So Rabbi says, "Kofin amita stam." Rabbi Yosef says, "No, the brothers can say that the land that he wants is iluya ki nixe malina le iluya ki nixe debe mar miriot is considered as great as the nechasim bar me miriot, which was considered to be very exquisite, high-class property, and maybe this one will benefit from rainfall more than the others, and therefore he can't just take it without providing some sort of compensation to the brothers for the value that they place on that particular field." And here we happen to pass like Rav Yosef, though normally we pass like Rabba when he argues with Rav Yosef. The Gemara in Daf Yud Gimel says that in the event that there is a piece of property where the parties have not agreed to just split it on their own, and it doesn't have enough space, so it's not the type of asset that would normally be split between the parties, and one person wants to split it, so he has the right to exercise according to Rav Yehuda, he has the right to exercise is dina de good or agud. He can exercise the rule of good or agud. He can say either you can buy me out and you can buy my portion, or he can say that to his partner, or otherwise, with that amount of money that you would buy me out, I will buy you out for the amount of money. Now, Tosos just says that it can't be an exorbitant amount, which is stipulated, because then a person who has much more money than whatever the property is worth will be able to take advantage of that. The Gemara on Daf Yud Daled Amud Aleph talks about who wrote the different Sfarim of Tanakh. Interestingly, it talks about different rabbis who were writing a Sefer Torah, trying to write the Sefer Torah in the proper fashion. So it says that Kasa Rabbi Ami Daled Me'a Sifrei Torah. Rabbi Ami wrote 400 Sifrei Torah. So that's what the rabbis told Rabbi Amnuna. So Amnuna said 400 Sifrei Torah. Maybe he just wrote the Pasuk Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. So Tosu says Rabbeinu Tam says Zemir. We see from here that the Pasuk of Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe is Kori Torah. It's considered a Torah all by itself. Like it says that a father teaches his son. As soon as the son is able to speak, he teaches his son Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe Moshe Kiyilas Yaakov. That counts as the entire Torah. The Gemara on the bottom of Yudalim Beis speaks about who wrote the different Sfarim of Tanakh. And it says Moshe Kasev Sifro Parshas Bilam Ve'Iyov. Moshe wrote his own Sefer and he wrote Parshas Bilam. Some say that means that it was put into his own words. We can learn prophecy Ludoris from it. And he wrote Sefer Iyov, which brings us to a discussion about Sefer Iyov, which occurs in a little bit. Now, Daf Tezubov asks who wrote the last eight psukim of the Torah. Here we have a machlokas. Rabbi Yehuda, some say Rabbi Nechemia, says that Yehoshua wrote the last eight psukim to speak about Moshe's death. Rabbi Shimon says, no, it can't be. Moshe must have written the entire thing. He just wrote the last eight psukim bedema. He wrote it in tears, Marashah says, so it shouldn't be Mexi Beshikla. So he wrote an exab that was erasable, that it wasn't imprinted forever. That's what it means that he wrote it in tears. The Gemara at the bottom of Tesvam and Aleph speaks about when did Eov live? So one day it says he lived in the days of Meraglim. And so it says, Ish, because it says in Eov, Ish Hayaber, it's Utz. And it says, with respect to the Meraglim, Hayesh Ba Eitz. Look and see if there is this great man who's considered to be like an Eitz. And that's a reference to Eov. There is one day in the Gemara, Rabbi Shmuel Bar the Wahhabi Rabbanim, sitting in front of Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Eov Lo Hayav Lenivra El Mashal Hayav. Eov never really lived. He never really existed. He's just a mashal. He's a metaphor. He's a parable of some sort. The Gemara, and then there are other opinions about other times that Eov could have lived, maybe the days of the Shoftim, Achashverosh, etc., etc. Gemara on Tev Zayin has a very important statement by Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says that Satan is described in the Eov story, Hu Satan Yetzirahu Malach HaMavis, that the Satan is the same force as the Yetzirah that causes us to sin, and the same force as the Malach HaMavis, and he brings various proofs. Rabbi Levi says that the Satan actually was L'shem Shemayim, and so to Penina, who taunted her co-wife Chana, they meant L'shem Shemayim. The Satan wanted to show that there should be a greater favoritism towards the Jewish people, so he was testing Eov with respect, and Penina wanted for Chana to pray with her full heart so that she would be able to have children. Says that Eov, one of the things that he did was he stole from orphans in order that he would improve the property and then return it to them. That was one of the ways in which he exercised his tzikas. Important line in Daf Tezayim Beis says that even though Eov said all kinds of things that would seem like they were almost heretical, like angry towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu, he wasn't punished for that. Why? So Amarava, Mikan, we learn from here, that a person person is not punished for things that they say when they are very emotionally vulnerable, something which is very important to remember in the Beis Din world. The Gemara on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph talks about how we find with respect to Abraham, that Abraham is described as a bakol, Yitzchak is described in terms of mikol, and Yaakov is described in terms of a kol. And that shows that they were given a taste of Olam Haba, which is why we say bakol mikol kol in our benching, if you're wondering where that came from. Gemara Yud Zayin Amud Beis has a machlokas, Abaye and Rava. This is the beginning of Perek Lo Yachpor, about can somebody dig next to, can they dig their pit next to the field of their fellow, even if it's a field that's not made for pits, that's not made for wells. Rava says that he's not supposed to do it because every single digging in the ground is going to be miskakesh, is going to cause harm to the field next to him, and therefore it is something which is not proper to do, and that is the shita of Rava that we seem to hold like. The Gemara on Daf Yud Ches says that asked the question that a person is not allowed to open up a store of a bakery or a dyeing store under where they dye things underneath a otzero shel chavero, underneath the warehouse of their chaver. But otherwise, it sounds like if the warehouse isn't already there, it would be okay. So the Gemara says that's different because this is the main place of the person's residence. Dira shiny, so we're more makel about what we allow in the main place of the person's residence. We have Rabbi Shiosi Shita here, which we fundamentally hold like, except in certain exceptional cases, where even Rabbi Yossi would agree that one has to be more stringent. Rabbi Yossi says, Al hanizak lahachik es atzmo, the one who would be damaged by his neighbor based on things that the neighbor is doing, he has to take steps to protect himself from his neighbor, but we don't stop the neighbor from doing the normal things that the neighbor would do. So therefore, the Tanna Kamma says, Malchikin es ha-mishra min ha-yerek, that if I have a mishra, if I have water in which I am soaking flax, that has to be removed from the yerek, from the cabbage, which is growing next door. So Rabbi Yossi says, no, the person is planting the cabbage, he has to just protect himself, and so forth. So Rabbi Yossi, we see, has this principle, has this rule of Al Hanizak Lahakik Es Atzmo, which is very, very important. When we speak about the various things that a person has to distance himself, when he actually puts these things in his ground, he has to distance a certain amount, says our Mishnah, from the field of his friend. So there are two different types of things that are spoken about. There are things which are cause a lot of heat, and there are things that cause a lot of lichluach. They cause a lot of moisture, and they have different rules that apply to them, things that apply to for moisture. So that requires that there be that there be some sort of plaster which is placed on the walls of what the person is digging, and requires extra measures. Okay, so the Gemara on Daf Yud Tes Amud Beis speaks about, is a person allowed to urinate next to the kosel shel chavero? There's a pasuk that says v'ichlati la'acham mashtin b'kir b'atzu b'azu b'Yisrael, that there won't be among the descendants of Akav anybody who's going to be urinating. So that sounds like that in general Jewish people are allowed to urinate in public next to a person's wall. So Gemara says, no, that could have been referring to dogs, but otherwise there is a certain amount that you have to generally remove yourself and distance yourself if you're going to be relieving yourself, urinating right next to the wall of your chaver, unless it's a very, very hard stone. The Gemara also speaks about a window in which there is a pesach, a tefach, that would enable tumah if there was a mace in one home to travel to the next home, and says that there are certain items that can reduce that tefach so that the tumah won't travel. And it says that a rokik would be able to actually, if you had like a wafer, a soft wafer, would be able to reduce it. I have a soft wafer is mekabel tumah, v'chol darash mekabel tumah ena chotzis b'pnei tumah. Anything which receives tumah cannot be a separation to tumah. So we say, no, this is talking about a wafer that's not mekabel tumah because it was nilos from mei pelos. It was not used with regular water that would qualify it to receive a tumah, but rather it was kneaded with mei pelos with fruit juice. Gemara and Daf Chuf Amud Aleph says, even a sefer Torah is memayit b'cholon. If I put a sefer Torah in this one tefach space, and now, or it was bigger than one tefach, and now because the sefer Torah is there, it won't be a tefach anymore. So sefer Torah also reduces the space. So the Gemara asks, but doesn't a sefer Torah require geniza? Don't I have to take that sefer Torah? Well, first of all, can I read from the sefer Torah? So we say, but boy, it's a worn out sefer Torah, but doesn't it then require geniza? So we say, no, sham tehei geniza, so that it can get its geniza right there in the window. That's the place where the sefer Torah is going to be stored. The Mishnah talks about that sometimes the Chazal said that you have to distance yourself a certain amount, but even if you distance yourself a certain amount, if you cause damage, you still have to pay the damage. That's what the Tanakhama says with respect to the distance of an oven, that an oven has to be a distance, has to be placed at least 4 amos away from the ceiling above it. But in the event that it caused damage anyway, Mishali Mashi Hizik. Rabbi Shimon disagreed and said, no, every single measurement was imposed by Chazal, so that if damage would be caused, the person wouldn't be responsible. We see, no, sometimes we say, we're going to allow you to put the thing in as long as you keep a certain distance, but if you cause the damage, you're going to have to pay anyway. Different types of laws of nuisance, according to Halacha. Daf Chof Aleph, Amun Aleph talks about the Takana of Yeshua ben Gamla. Yeshua ben Gamla made a Takana that all the children should get a Jewish education, and in every single city there should be places where there will be schoolhouses. Therefore, in a place where people live, they can't complain. Mikol Hatinoko, says the Mishnah, that there are too many children that are screaming and yelling because this is something which we believe is a value, and therefore people will have to withstand all the noise in order that we have proper schools for the children. And then the Gemara talks about the different types of requirements for somebody to be a mechanech. Let's say that I have somebody who is very learned, but he's not so careful in the way that he teaches the children in terms of the information. But somebody else is not as learned, but whatever he teaches very, very precisely. So Gemara says that you should definitely have somebody who is more precise. Why is that? Because Shebeshta Kimen da all. Because if a mistake sets in, this mistake will set in forever, be very, very difficult to remove, and therefore it's better to have somebody, even if he isn't as learned, who's going to be more precise with respect to the children. And you try to get the best person. If there's somebody better, then a person can't be 100% secure in their job, because kinesofim ta bechokma, because if there is a feeling that somebody has to watch their back, then they're going to be more meticulous in terms of their teaching. And if they're going to be negligent in their teaching, they don't require hasra, they don't require the same type of warning as other professions, because mikra yenuka, in addition to various other professions like a sofer, masa, and a tifka, and a butcher, kemusarin ve'omdin dininu, they're considered like they are they're forewarned in case that they would do anything of a negligent fashion in terms of their care of the children. Chof Aleph Amud Beis is also very important, because it's the sugya about Hasagas Gvul, about if one person wants to open up a business and there's another person who has a similar business in the neighborhood. So Machlokas Rafuna Rafuna Braid Rav Yeshua, whether somebody is allowed to do that or not. So Rafuna Braid Rav Yeshua says that it is permissible if somebody is within the same neighborhood, they're within the same mavoi, and he has a suffix. What if they're from a different mavoi, but they're in a different city? And that we say, since it's a suffix, we allow that as well. But if the person is coming from another city and wants to set up the same business, we only allow him to do it if he's going to pay the taxes of the city. Now, the Gemara of Chabez Amin Aleph speaks about if there is a rabbi who is selling wares, and he's coming from outside, and there is a big shuk, there's like a big marketplace in the city, so then we give that rabbi the special rights to be able to sell his wares. We give him a certain amount of priority. So as Rav Dimi brought dried figs from Naharda to a particular town, and the Reish Galusa said to Rava, check him out to see if he's a Talmid Chacham, so that we'll give him a special booth in our marketplace. So Rava said to Rava Debar Abba, you should check him out. Rava Debar Abba checked him out. He asked him a question, and Rav Dimi wasn't able to answer the question, and therefore he was not given a booth in the marketplace. He complained to Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef said, oh, whoever is not treating whoever's not treating you properly, just as Hashem doesn't countenance oppression, he shouldn't countenance this oppression. And then Rav Adar Bar Abba died. So it's a whole big debate among different rabbis. Was Rav Yosef's curse or statement what caused Rav Adar Bar Abba to die? Was it what other people did that caused Rav Adar Bar Abba to die? Was it because Rav didn't give him a booth in the marketplace? So finally, the Gemara says it probably was because Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak thought that Rav Adar Bar Abba had died, because he would always go over his shiur with Rav Adar Bar Abba, and Rav Adar Bar Abba got preoccupied or got distracted because there were other people who were asking him shaylos. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak said, oh, I think he's dead. So that's probably what caused him to be dead. The Gemara on Daf Chof Gimel says that ain chazaka l'nezikin, that there is no chazaka a person if they're causing damage to somebody else. It doesn't matter how long they cause the damage, that the other person can always protest. And the Gemara says this is only with respect to very similar, very serious types of nuisances, like kutra, like smoke, or besakise. Somebody has an outhouse which is out in the open, which is causing a very terrible foul smell. The Mishnah says, that a dovecote has to be kept 50 amos away from the city. It has to be kept 50 amos away from the city because the doves are going to cause damage to eating away at other people's fields. And the Gemara asks, but it says elsewhere, it says in Baba Kama, that one is supposed to keep traps for Yonim 30 reis. With 30 reis is actually 4 meal, which is 1 parsa. He has to keep it away 30 reis from the city. So is it 30 reis or is it 50 amos? So Abaye says, well, they travel a lot. They'll travel and fly 30 reis, but in terms of what they're going to eat, that's only going to be within 50 amos. So you might ask, if it's the shloshim reis, it's the same thing as 4 meal. Why not say 4 meal? So the answer is, then we wouldn't have, in porsin nishbin the yonim, elam kein vayirachim, in yishu shloshim reis, you wouldn't have yonim and reis in the same sentence. And it's really important to have that. The Gemara on Amud Beis says, according to Rabbi Chanina, that if I have a rov, I have a majority, that something belongs to the majority, or karov, or something is going, maybe it belongs to the place which is nearest, so then I follow the rov. So we ask the question then with respect to a nipple. The Mishnah says that if there is a little tiny dove that's wandering around within 50 amos, we assume it belongs to the dove coat. So we say, yeah, that's because, and then if it's just kind of wandering around and speaking and walking slowly, it's just kind of a madada, so then it's not going to go more than 50 amos away. So we know in that case that it belongs to the person who is closest. Rabbi Yemiya asked, what if this dove has 1 foot within the 50 amos of the owner's dove cut, and 1 foot is outside of the 50 amos? So they threw Rabbi Yemiya out of the base medrash for asking that question. So Dafa Chabdalid said later on in the Masechta, we'll see, he got rehabilitated. Yes, okay, they got to let him in, back in later on. So now the Gemara on Dafa Chabdalid Amud Base says that the Mishnah says that a tree has to be kept away from the city 25 amos. But what if the tree came first and then came the city? So the tree still has to be cut down. Still has to be cut down because it takes away from the beauty of the city. But the person planted the tree gets to be reimbursed. So the question is, why doesn't he say, first reimburse me and then I'll cut it down? So Kahana says, because kidra de beishutfi lo kamim lo kidukarira, because if we're going to wait for all the people in the city to get together to pay him the money, it's never going to happen. It might take a really, really long time, and we really want that tree to come down. So therefore he cuts down the tree first and he worries about getting paid afterwards. But anything which is going to be a group, like they say, too many cooks spoil the... what is it? Broth. The broth. So too, Kedivah Debei Shutfi means that when you have a lot of people who are responsible, it just takes longer for things to get done. The Gemara Chaf Hey says, Rabbi Yossi, Modi Rabbi Yossi, Begivi Delay. Rabbi Yossi agrees, even though Al Nizik Lahak Gizatzmo, if there is harm which is caused right away, when based on a person's actions, so even Rabbi Yossi would agree that it is prohibited. What's an example of that? So the Gemara gives an example on the bottom of Chaf Hey Amar Beis. Papi Yona, Papa John. Papa John built a palace. He built a palace, and there were some sesame seed crushers, Atsuri, who were in his neighborhood. And when they would crush the sesame, so even like the jars on top of his palace, they would shake. So he said, "You can't allow these sesame crushers next door to crush their sesames." So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yossi begiri delay. Rabbi Yossi would agree in this case that it's not allowed because it's immediate and direct damage that is being caused by the sesame crushers. There was a case on Daf Kuf Avav Amud Aleph. Rav Chanan had trees. He had trees, but the trees were right on the border of the vineyard. The pardesa means vineyard, says Rashi, of Rabbi Yossi. And there were birds that would sit in the trees, and then they would go to the pardesa, they would go to the vineyard, and they would cause loss to the vineyard. So therefore, he had to, Rabbi Yossi told Rabbi Chanan, you got to cut down the trees. So he said, so after all of that, it was clear that he had to cut down the trees. He said, I don't want to cut down the tree. Why don't I cut down the tree? Because it is a fruit-bearing tree. And Rav says, you're not allowed to cut down fruit-bearing trees because it is considered to be an improper thing, even if here it was warranted. And Rabbi Chanina said, that he says that his son only died because he had cut down a tree when it wasn't tied at time, therefore he didn't want to take any chances. Mari Nikolay, it's true, the halakha might be, since the tree is causing damage, in this case you're allowed to cut it down, but you want to cut it down, Likots, you cut it down. I'm not cutting it down and taking such chances. Gemara on Daf Chav Zayin Amud Beis speaks about Ilan Shenotel Steichaveo. I have a tree that is tilting towards the Sadeh, that is tilting towards the field of the next person, meaning the branches go to the field of the next person. So how much has to be cut from that tree? So says the Mishnah, Kotzeis Molo Hamardei Al Gavei Yakovisha. Whatever interferes with the plow can should be cut. However, we do not paskin like Abashal, who says that whenever we have a non-fruit bearing tree, so the entire amount of the branches that correspond past the property line, Keneged Amishkolas, have to be cut. We don't hold that way. Why don't we hold that way? Perhaps a hint is what the Gemara says at the end of the previous sugya, that if I have a tree which where the branches extend over to the next property, maybe the person who owns those trees can still take the fruit, even though the fruit are growing in branches of the next property, and to bring them as bikurim. Because that's one of the Tanaim in which Yeshua gave the land to Eretz Yisrael, and gave the land to Bnei Yisrael, and it applies even outside of Eretz Yisrael, the Tanaim of Yeshua. Says Rashi, people shouldn't go, if it's not going to harm them or bother them, then it's not going to interfere with their plow, so then they should leave it the way it is. Gemara Chof Chesam and Al, this is Cheskas Habatim. Cheskas Habatim is about the taking ownership of land that used to belong to somebody else, even when the person who's been on the land can't necessarily prove that he bought it, but he claims that he bought it, he just can't find his shtar to prove it. So how much time does he have to be on the land to have a valid claim? So says that the commission has a bunch of different shitas. The shita we all like is shalosh shanim miyom liyom, that the amount of time is 3 years from the beginning to the end. What's the reason that we allow this? So Gemara gives all kinds of different suggestions, then finally settles on Daf Kaptes of an Aleph on the following. Elam Rava. Rava says, a shasa kamaisa mizdari interest mishtari. Person watches over their shtar for 1 year. Tati uflas mizdari. Second and third year, they also watch over their shtar. Tfeinu mizdari. You can't expect people to be able to hold on to their shtaros more than 3 years. Therefore, that's why we have this law of Cheskas Habatim. What if a person has to prove that they were there for 3 years? How do they prove it? So the Gemara says, well, they can, let's say that they could only prove they were there during the day, but how could they prove that they were there at night? So if they rented it, so the tenants can say, yes, we rented it both the day and the nighttime from this person who's been there for 3 years, who's had exercised ownership over this for 3 years. So the Gemara says, but they know may do son. But they already paid the money of the rental to the person who is the purported owner, and therefore, of course, they want it to remain in that person's possession, so they won't lose their money. So the Gemara says, no, we're talking about where they didn't pay the money, and they'll say, we'll pay the money to whoever you tell us to pay the money to. Okay. Says the Gemara and Daf Lamed, we seem to have two contradictory rulings of Rav Nachman. That there's one case where the person was in the house for, he was in the land for 3 years, and which was there was a house which was on that land, and the other person who previously owned the property said the reason I didn't say anything is because I was there the entire time. I was in the inner rooms of the house. So they went to Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman said, the person who wants to claim that they have a proper chazakah, zil barach ilaska, they have to prove it. So in other words, that the person who has the presumptive right is the one who was the previous owner, and the one who has the chazakah, who wants to claim the chazakah, he has to bring the proof. And then there's a second case in which there was a seller who sold bar sisin. He said, I'm selling bar sisin, or the land which is bar sisin, to the purchaser. And purchaser came along and he said that this particular land is not the bar sisin land. It was called the bar sisin, but what the person meant was, I'm selling all the land that I had purchased from somebody named bar sisin, but this land also happened to be called bar sisin. So purchaser said, I'm entitled to this land too. So Nachman said to the seller, you want this land, you got to prove that this land is not included within bar sisin. So Gemara says, in one case, Rav Nachman was standing up for the previous owner, and in this case, he was standing up for the purchaser, saying that the purchaser, that the previous owner has to bring the proof. So which is it? So the Gemara explains that there is a difference. And what's the difference? So it says to the Gemara about that in this particular case, Kiman Damale the Bay Bar Sisin, since the seller had said, in the second case, I'm selling you Bar Sisin, Mekayim the Bay Bar Sisin, the property is called Bar Sisin, Aledi De Rami Lagliye, the Bay Bar Sisini. Seller has to prove that it's not Bar Sisin. That's what it's called. But Hakloyela nakik shtara, but in the other case where the person is trying to prove the chazaka and the person who was the previous owner says, well, I was there the entire time, so therefore I didn't think that I needed to say anything. So mila aminale kaim shtar chavakim minitze. If he would have brought a shtar to prove his point, he would have had to produce the shtar. So he wants to win his claim based on chazaka, so he has to prove the chazaka. So he has to prove that he was really there for 3 years without the other person being there at the same time. Okay, now the Gemara on Daf Lamed Aleph says that we don't say migo b'makom edim. If there's one person who said that the field belonged to my father, and the other person said the field belonged to my father, one person brought witnesses that the field belonged to his father, and the other one just brought witnesses that he was in the field for the 3 years, so says Rabbah, well, maybe he has a migo, because he could have said, yes, I was there 3 years, and I'm claiming that I bought it from you, because the other one proved that it was really his field. So Abai says that's called Malin Leshakim B'Makom Edim. I have Edim that it doesn't belong to this person. This person's not claiming that he bought the field from the other one who proved that the field had belonged to his father and was really his field. That's what we call Migo B'Makom Edim, that there are Edim that basically are contradicting his words that he had claimed that the field really belonged to his father and he didn't prove that it belonged to his father. So we don't say Migo B'Makom Edim. The Gemara then goes on to say that if afterwards he wanted to change his claim and say, yeah, it did belong to your father, but I bought it from you, so then he would have the right to do so as long as he didn't advance his first claim in Bezdin. Why is that? Because my time of inish lamaglita nasei elabedina. Because a person sometimes is coy about their claims. They're not going to express their claims to everybody. They're just going to the outside of the Bezdin. They won't say their full claims. Then when they come into the Bezdin, then they'll say their full claims. So that's an exception to the general principle of kimin shehigid shuv eino chozer u magid. The Gemara in Daf Lamed and Alpen Beis says that if I have two groups of witnesses that both contradict each other, but Huna Paskins that they're not considered to be invalidated for the future, each one could have been telling the truth, so therefore when it comes to other testimonies, each one is allowed to testify in the future. Gemara Lamed Beis, summing up on the bottom, says that there is somebody who asked their fellow who the land that belonged to the owner, to one owner, and the owner said to the squatter, what are you doing here? And the squatter said, I bought it from you, and in fact I have this shtar. And the other person claimed, well, I think it's a forged star. So the one who was in the land said to Rabbah, you know what? It is a forged star. However, I had a really good star, but that really good star that I had got lost. So therefore, that's why I'm coming up with this forged star. So Rabbah says that really the person could have responded, it's not a forged star, because the other fellow couldn't prove that it was a forgery. So therefore, we accept this claim. On the other hand, there is the Gemara has another case where there is was a creditor who was claiming money from a debtor, and he said, here's my shtar, and the debtor said, it's a forged shtar, and the creditor admitted to Rabbah, yeah, it's a forged shtar, but I had a really good shtar, but I lost the shtar. So the Gemara says, so here, the Gemara paskins like Rabbi Yosef, who says that since this person's claim that of the shtar has been rebutted by himself, it's a hodas baal din kemei edim, that he admits that it's a forged shtar, so we don't allow him to collect. While in the first case, we paskin like Rabbah, who said, Malan l'shakya, the person has no reason to lie if he's not telling the truth. If he wants to lie, then he could just as easily claim that it's a really good shtar, so therefore we let him keep the property. So why is it that we seem to have contradictory rulings? We pass like Rabbah in the case of the property, and we pass like Rav Yosef in the case of the money. So the answer is that we just keep whatever it is that is being disputed in the hands of whoever is occupying it. In the case of the property, the person was there for 3 years, and he claimed that, and he says, I lost the shtar, and he's producing this good shtar, and in the case of the Zuzi, the case of the money, we're saying to the debtor that the debtor doesn't have to pay the money until the person actually proves that the debtor owes the money. So that's why in that case we are more machmir, because it would require that if we believe the creditor, then the debtor would have to fork up the money. Daf Lamed Gimel, we say that shtar l'peri lo avdi, that if a person's claim is simply that the owner allowed them to go into the field to eat the fruit, and even though he doesn't have a shtar, and it's not quite 3 years, so he doesn't have to prove that he has the right to be in the field based on the shtar. Whatever he ate, he does not have to pay back, because a person, if they say, well, the owner allowed me to go there to eat the payros, to be a sharecropper, so that is not normally memorialized in a shtar, and therefore there he would not lose the claim, as opposed to if he claimed that the land belonged to him, in which case if he didn't have a shtar for the first 3 years, so then that would show show that not only does the land not belong to him, but he'd also have to return whatever fruit he had eaten during that period of time. There were two people on Daf Lamed Dalman Beis who are arguing about a boat. This one says, Haimar Didihi. This one says the boat is mine, and this one says that the boat is mine. So the question is that what do they do in order to prove the claim? Should the Bezdin take the boat and just hold on to the boat, because one of the parties says, I'm going to prove that it's mine, but in the meantime, hold on to the boat? So we say no, because since he hasn't proven that he says, the Bezdin shouldn't hold on to the boat, because the Bezdin will never, if there's never proof that it belongs to either one of them, the Bezdin will just be stuck with his boat forever, and therefore it's better to just leave things the way it is. Then we have the case of Zeh Meshal Avosei. One person says the land is belonging to my family, and the other one says the land belongs to my family. Rabbi Nachman says, called the Olam Gevar. Let the mightiest man win. So what's it called? The Olam Gevar, that the one who brings the best proofs, or the one who is the best physical force, is the one who will end up with his property. But we can't decide in accordance with either one of them. So the question the Gemara asks is, why is this different from the case where I have two staros that were given for a certain property that were both dated the same day in favor of two different people, where we have a machlokas? Rav says that we just split the property that was given over to these two people between the two people. And Shmuel says, no, we follow Shuda the Daini. We follow whichever one. This says, explains the Rashbam. Ready up to Rashbam. Rashi had died a few blad ago. Mm-hmm. Shmuel says, Shuda the Daini. We follow whichever one that the Dayanim think that the person would have wanted to give the property to. And Tosu says, just can flip a coin. But we basically assume like the Rashbam. So why in this case do we not say Kol Delim Gvar? So we say, because this case, we're never going to prove one way or another. The two Staros are both of equal weight. So Achsam Lekam, the Milka, Lamekam, Allah, the Milso. We're not going to be able to prove one way or another. However, in the case where each one says it belongs to his father, so presumably they'll bring various riots and various proofs, so we just leave things alone until one of them is going to be able to bring better proofs than the other one. Brings us to Daf Lamed Bav. So we have the general rule is Godrus Elam Chazaka. If there are wandering things like wandering animals and somebody holds on to it, there's no Chazaka that it belongs to them. Normally, if you hold on to Metatlin, then the Chazaka is that it belongs to you. But if it's something which is like a wandering thing, so maybe it just wandered into your property from somebody else and it doesn't belong to you. However, says Rava, if you hold on to it for 3 years and you claim that it was sold to you and you just don't have the star, etc., etc., so then there is a Chazaka even for Godrus, even for things that are wandering. What about the Cheskas Gimel Shana, when a person makes the claim they were on a field for 3 years and therefore they claim that they had bought the field, they just lost the shtar? What if one of the fields was a field that the original owner wouldn't have like had a reason to complain because they were just leaving the land fallow? So does that count? Does that not count? So the Gemara has different opinions and comes to the opinion that Nira Lavi Chazaka, that if it was just left fallow, so since the person was just plowing the field, so the owner was happy this person was plowing the field. He's not benefiting from the field. He's just plowing the field, and the owner gets the benefit that the field is being plowed that year. So therefore, the fact that he didn't say anything doesn't prove anything. So the Gemara on Daf Lamed Zayin says that if a person sold the two trees, so does the lokeach have karka if two trees were sold? So this is a question. So makar ilanas v'shir karka lefano. A person just sold two trees. So it says the Gemara, it's a plukta the Rabbi Kiva Rabbanim. Rabbi Kiva moke ba'in yafa moke. Rabbi Kiva has a shita in general that when a person sells, they sell in a way which is the most favorable to the purchaser. So islay. So then it would follow that the lokeach has the place of the trees. Meaning, what does that mean? The place of the trees, that if the trees should die, they would have the right to plant additional trees. While according to the Chachamim, we don't say the place where the trees grew. So yeah. if the trees died, so on that area of the land, the purchaser would be allowed to plant a new tree. They'd be able to plant new trees. That's what Rabbi Akiva would say. Gemara Daf Lamed Ches is a mission that says that that if somebody had a field in which they were in the field for 3 years that belonged to a previous person, and it was Galil, it was in the upper Galilee, and the person who owned the field was Yehuda, they were in a totally different province, then it's not considered to be a good chazaka. So why is that? Is that because since the person was in a faraway land, they were in a faraway place, so even if they would have complained that somebody is in their land, so that wouldn't have constituted a sufficient complaint that anybody would have been able to hear about it, and therefore they can't be held responsible to register a complaint. So the Gemara says, no. Mecha shlo b'fanav havia mecha. That if a mecha is made from a place which is far away, And it is not in front of the individual who's squatting in the land, that's still considered to be a good mechah. Why do I care it's a good mechah? So it warns that person that they better hold on to their shtar for more than 3 years. And if they don't hold on to their shtar for more than 3 years, they don't get a kinyan chazakah. So why then is Yehuda v'Galil not a good chazakah? Because it's v'shas cheirim. Because Yehuda and Galil are places which were always, just like if you have a war between two countries, people aren't able to travel between two countries to get the word out that somebody is registering a complaint, for example. So here too as well, there was no transportation between one and the other, so therefore it's considered to be kashas kerim, and that's why you cannot have a chazakah. The Gemara, however, says as well that if a person, that even though mechah shel b'fanim is a good mechah as a general rule, ein machzikin minikse borech, if somebody ran away, they ran away from like the authorities, and then somebody else goes on their land, it's not considered to be a good chazakah because the person couldn't have registered a complaint. Why couldn't they have registered a complaint if we say mechash lo b'fanav having mechah, wherever they ran to, they could have registered a complaint. So we say, no, when we say it's not good chazakah, that's talking about borech machas machmas mardin. When a person runs away because their life is in danger. If their life is in danger, they're not going to reveal their location, and they're not going to take any chances to make a mechah, even from far away, even though news would be able to travel, they wanted to disguise themselves and to obscure themselves as much as possible. What is the nature? How does one register a mecha'a? That's the Gemara at the bottom of the Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis.
So it's a bit say Yehuda and Galil. Because there was no communication,
there was no transportation. No transportation. Ain't Shayaris Messias Mesulazu. Yes.
As a result of absent transportation, therefore there was no communication.
That's correct. That's correct. The communication would not be able to would not be able to flow. Would not be able to travel. So what is the formulation of a chazaka? Palnia gazalna who dinakiva la'aray. So the owner of the field says, I have a gazlan who's in my field, the gazlanusha, and the lamacha tavana le bedina, and tomorrow, when I have a chance, I'm going to take him to Bezdin. So that's considered to be a good mecha'ah. Why is, parenthetically, a mecha'ah shlo b'fanav considered to be a good mecha'ah? So the Gemara basically gives you the answer over here. It says it previously as well. Chava chava islay, chava de chava chava islay. That every single person that you mention it to, so they're going to mention it to somebody else, and that person knows somebody else, and so forth, and it's like a game of telephone. Eventually, it's going to travel to the correct location. In front of how many people does the mecha'ah have to be registered? So the Gemara here has the machlokas in front of how many people, and whether in front of three people or in front of two people. So Rabbi Yochanan says only in front of two people is good enough. Why? And how do we paskin? So we paskin that in front of two people is good enough. Why isn't one person good enough? One person also can get the word out. So says the Gemara, there has to be sadusa. It has to be edus. So we require sadusa be'inan, and that's the reason why the mecha'ah has to be registered in front of two people. In front of three people, that would be if we were worried about lashon hara. So if something is recorded in front of three people, so the Gemara quotes Rabba Bar Rav Huna, says komilsa d'misama be'apei plasa leisba mishum bishna lishna bisha. That if something has already been recorded or registered in front of three people, so it no longer is within the realm of lashon hara. Question is, maybe that doesn't apply to outright lashon hara, just sort of the things that are vak lashon hara, different ways of interpreting that. But here, where the machlokas about whether you need three or two is dependent upon whether you need edus or whether you need publicity. So if you just need edus, then two is considered to be good enough. If a person makes a general statement, daf mem, a person makes a general statement of which they say something where it's going to be for their benefit that it be recorded, so then it's not necessary that they explicitly tell the people, the witnesses they sit in front of, to write it down. So modav ifnei shaim, a person's about to sign a contract and they feel like it's under duress and they say in front of two witnesses, I'm about to sign a contract under duress, ain't sarach lo maksovu. They don't have to tell them to write it down because since it's a sechus, it's clearly in their benefits and then they don't have to say to write it down. So the Gemara then has a discussion about moda'a, that it says that if we do not know, if it does not say that the witnesses are aware of the nature of the onus, then it's not considered to be a good moda'a. But if it is the type of thing where the individual has no reason to do it if they're not getting a benefit, it's not like they're getting a clear benefit, like a husband gives a get or somebody gives a matana, so then as long as they do any moda, it's considered to be a milo gilo milsa biyama, and that's considered to be good enough. So because a moda in a get, for example, would be considered to be good enough to invalidate a get, so says the Rashbam and Daf Mem Beis, Mishum Haki, this is why it's akino begitin, there's a takana when it comes to gitin, the lo limit of gita achi batil habal, kol hamoda. Baal Shemasar. Then we don't write the get until the Baal does a bitul modas, until he says that I invalidated any statements that could potentially harm the validity of the get. The Gemara on Daf Mem Aleph says, Rav Anan Shakal Bitka Be'are, that Rav Anan, there was some type of a flood in his field, was overrun by flooding waters, and therefore he had to move around the walls, the fences were moved around from his property, and he had to reestablish them. So he reestablished them, but he made a mistake. He put them too far into the property of his neighbor, so he extended his boundary unintentionally. So, but then when his neighbor complained, he said, "But you helped me when I reestablished my boundary. You helped me actually put up the fence again. You actually helped me establish the fence, so therefore I should be allowed to keep it." So Amalei, so the Rav Nachman, who was adjudicating this case between Rav Anan and his neighbor, said Mechila v'Tolsi, that even though the person was Mokel, because they allowed for the fence to go on their field, they thought that it was being put in the proper place, so therefore it was Betos. So if it's a Mechila v'Tolsi, Mechila v'Tolsi is not considered to be binding. Okay, Gemara and Daf Mem Aleph on the base talks about how Beis Hillel has the shita. Let's say I have two witnesses that come along. One person says that Reuven owes $100 to Shimon, and the other one says Reuven owes $200 to Shimon. They're not saying the same thing, but yesh bechlam masayim monet, that within the 100 is included within the 200, and therefore both witnesses are testifying that Reuven owes Shimon $100, and therefore $100 is owed. I'm going to have to take a drink. I apologize. The Gemara in Daf Mem Beis has a distinction between a sale of property and a loan. When it comes to a sale of property, as long as the property is sold with edim in front of witnesses, even if it was not originally written down, if the property is then taken away from the lokeach, and the lokeach and the mokeh provided title insurance to the lokeach, so the lokeach is allowed to collect from mishubadim, from subsequently sold property of the mokeh, even though it wasn't registered in a shtar. But if it's a milveh, if it's a loan, so then it requires it to be written down. It must be written down. If it's not written down, even if it was done in front of witnesses, the creditor is only allowed to collect from the debtor's actual assets and not from subsequently sold assets of the debtor. What's the distinction between the two cases? So the Gemara says, because milveh ki kayosif betzina kayosif, when a person loans money and they borrow money, it's generally done very privately. They don't want the whole world to know. Okay, litzlu nixe alav, because the borrower doesn't want the whole world to know about it, and therefore world's not going to get it's not going to get out, and the lekukos and the subsequent purchasers had no way to know that there was a lien on their property. But zvinei man zavin arab if haheskid zavin, however, if when a person buys property, they do it publicly, so that everyone will know that the property belongs to them, and therefore even though it wasn't written down, it was just with witnesses, that's good enough in order to create a lien that the subsequent purchasers were sufficiently placed on notice. The Mishnah on the bottom of Mem Beis Amud Aleph talks about how even though when it comes to the chazakah of having a claim that would entitle somebody to stay on property, that's one type of chazakah, but then there's also a kinyan chazakah. When a seller sells property to a purchaser and says you can take ownership of that property by doing a chazakah, by putting up a fence, by digging on that property, by taking away a fence from that property, by locking the doors of that property, null, begadru, paritz, koshu, even if it's only a little bit, harezu chazakah, that would constitute a sufficient kinyan chazakah. The Gemara says that there are certain people who are not able to get a chazakah on each other's land because they wouldn't think of stopping the other from being on the land. So one is, but other people are allowed to. So what about shutfin? So we say that shutfin is the Gemara, the Mishnah had said, a shutfin ein lam chazakah. The shutfin do not have a chazakah, right? Shutfin do not have chazakah. So the question is, why is that? Because Shmuel says shutav kiyori bereshus adami. Because when a shutav goes into the property of their fellow, of the partner, it's considered like they were given permission, and the fact that they were there does not prove that the property belongs to them. But they are allowed to testify. Me'idin zeh l'zeh. They're allowed to testify testify to each other that the property that the other has really belongs to the other person. So the Gemara says, "Am I nogin beidusen hein?" But if they haven't completely split up the partnership with the land between the two of them, so each one has nogeya because they eventually are going to want a piece of that land. So how can they testify for each other? So he said, "We're talking about when the land had already been split up between the two of them, that they had already purchased the various parts of the partnership from each other. So therefore, they no longer had an interest." In general, the Gemara here discusses when does a, can a person who had an interest in something, when can they remove that interest from invalidating themselves as witnesses. So it talks about, for example, if you have Bnei Ha'ir, where there's an adjudication, a Din Torah, about a Sefer Torah that belongs to the city, there's a contest as to who is entitled to the Sefer Torah. Does it belong to this city or the other city? So that anybody from this city which benefits from the Sefer Torah, they're not allowed to testify or to sit as Dayanim in that case, because they're going to benefit from the Sefer Torah. So a person, otherwise, if they would be able to remove themselves from the benefit, it sounds like they would be able to recuse themselves from the case. And Tosso says that even though they might have been disqualified to begin with, since the disqualification is not an intrinsic disqualification, like with respect to a relative, it's only mamon, it's only because they have a vested interest, as long as that interest goes away, then they would be able to testify. The Gemara on Daf Mem Dalid Amud Beis says that even though karkos, when it comes to land, so land is mortgaged as a lien for somebody who is a creditor, but metaltlin, but movable property, is not mortgaged as a lien. There's a Rashbam on Daf Kufayin Dalman Aleph who talks about how nowadays it's a takanas gaonim that even movable property is mortgaged for payment of a ksuva, and even movable property is mortgaged for payment of debts above that were inherited by yisomim, by orphans that they have to pay from their father. But as a general rule, the Gemara says the metaltalin are not subordinated as part of a lien to creditors. The alpha gav the kasulim glima da kisve, even though the document of indebtedness might say that the creditor can collect even from the shirt which is on the back of the debtor, that's only if the shirt is on the back of the debtor. But if the shirt is actually given over to a purchaser, then the shirt cannot be collected from a subsequent purchaser. So it can only be from the debtor himself. Is everybody still following? Are we doing okay? Okay, good. Okay. Daf Mem Hey Amud Aleph. Mem Hey Amud Aleph says that what about this is a case of the stars of Mem Dalam base. Gufa, I'm a rabbin by Shmuel Mishmei de Shmuel. Mokas Adel Chaver Shlo Bechrayus. If somebody sold a field to his fellow, but the fellow would not have the right, in the event that there would be a creditor of the seller that would take the field in payment of a debt that was owed by the seller to the creditor, it was sold shelo b'achrayus, that the purchaser will not be allowed to now get reimbursement from the seller. So ein mein lo aleh. So the seller is not allowed to testify that the field belongs to the purchaser. Because now the seller is going to benefit from this testimony that the creditor of the seller will be able to collect the field, and the seller is not going to lose out because the purchaser is not going to be able to go back and collect from the seller, right? If they would be able to go back and collect from the seller, the Gemara said a little bit earlier that seller would be able to testify. That's the Gemara on Daf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. If the only Achrayas was Achrayas that he's guaranteeing a good title, but not necessarily that he's guaranteeing reimbursement of the collection of any lien holders, he would be able to testify. But here, he's not able to testify. So the Gemara says that why is it that he's not able to testify? If the original owner has other land, then the creditor will collect that land. If he doesn't have other land, so then it's not going to make a difference anyway, because of the fact that the creditor wouldn't be able to go after him in the event that the creditor wouldn't be able to collect this land. So what is he benefiting from? So Gemara says he's still benefiting because he's lover this way. The original owner doesn't want to be a Rasha because he didn't pay his debts. This way he's paying his debts. So say, oh, but he's going to be a Rasha because the one who sold the field to is now going to lose the field. So be a Rush in that sense. He said, no, I'm not a Rush. When I sold to the purchaser, I said, I'm selling it without any kind of insurance. So he knew that I have no responsibility towards him. So therefore, vis-a-vis him, I'm not really considered to be a Rush. Okay. The Gemara on Daf Mem Vav. Gemara says, somebody gave some utensils to be fixed by an artisan, and he got different utensils back. He's allowed to use those utensils. Why? He might be using somebody else's utensils. So the answer is that sometimes a person will give their utensils to an artisan with a stipulation that the artisan is allowed to sell it to other people, in which case it's now in the artisan's domain. So as long as the artisan didn't say to him, Taliska, I'm giving you your utensil, your garment. I mean, let's say it's a laundry, that it's a dry cleaning establishment. I'm giving you your garment. As long as they say I'm giving you your garments, the assumption can be that somebody else gave him a garment to sell, and therefore it's permissible for this person to utilize that garment, even though it's not his garment, until things are straightened out. Very interesting mnemonic. On Daf Mem Vav Mem Beis, the Gemara gives us a mnemonic of Amolek. Says you can remember four dinim because they spell out the word Amalek. Yeah. So Machotim Chazekam Amalek when it's for bad, but here we're going to try to use Amalek for good to remember some Torah. So Amalek stands for Arif. That an Arif, a person who is a guarantor, can testify that a certain land belongs to the borrower as long as the borrower has another land, and therefore the guarantor is not relying upon the lover paying from this land in order for the creditor not to go after the guarantor. Malve made a lover, this lay Arachavisi. Similarly, the mem is that a creditor is allowed to testify on behalf of a debtor of his that certain land belongs to the debtor as long as there's other land that the creditor would have been able to collect from. Lokach Risha made a Lokach Sheni, and a first purchaser is allowed to testify on behalf of a second purchaser. Meaning what? Meaning if I have Reuven who sold a field to Levi and then he sold a field to Yehuda, and now somebody is coming along and they're claiming that the field that was sold to Yehuda was really stolen from Reuven. So Levi, the first purchaser, is allowed to testify on behalf of Yehuda, the second purchaser, as long as Yehuda has another field that a creditor would be able to collect from. And then we have the case of Kablan, which is a more serious type of a guarantor, as we'll see later in the Masechta, that that a person is, the creditor would be allowed to go after the Kablan even to begin with. So some say that a Kablan, a creditor, can testify on behalf of a borrower that certain land belongs to him as long as there's other land that belongs to the borrower. And others say, no, he's still no Gea Be'edus because he wants all the lands, even if there are multiple lands. He wants all of them to remain with the borrower because there's much more of a chance, there's much more of a risky chance that if he's the only one who has quality land, that the creditor is going to go directly after the Kablan. But those are the four cases, Arev, Malve, Lokech, and Kablan, that stands for the mnemonic of Amalek. Mem Zayin and Beis, famous din of Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, Tayub Zayin Zvine Zvine. If you have somebody who forces a seller to sell their object, but the purchaser pays good money for it, it's considered to be a good sale. Why is that? My time, according to Mazin, in this you love the honest love of Mazin. Whenever a person sells they're selling their items because they desperately need the money. So they're always under duress on a certain level. Nonetheless, the sale is considered to be a good sale. What's the svara behind it? So the Gemara Mem Chesem and Aleph brings the proofs that this sort of thing works from a get, when we say that we can force our husband to give a get. So we say, no, that's maybe only because the mitzvah lishmoa divrei chachamim, because it's considered to be a voluntary get, because he knows he's supposed to follow what the rabbis say. Person who's obligated to bring a korban and we force him to do it is considered to be a good korban. When he says rotza ani, in both those two cases, he says rotza ani. The nikle, the tahari le kapara, there too, it's, so he'll have a good kapara, he'll have atonement for his sin. So that can be the explanation of why this works. So why does this work? It's a svara, says the Gemara. Agavun say gamro makne, because he's being compelled, so therefore he has the requisite das, he has the requisite commitment that he is going to sell it once he's forced and he's getting money. So therefore that's considered to be requisite das, requisite intent to effectuate a good sale. What if you have a case, says the Gemara Mem Chesem Beis, where somebody forces a woman to marry them? Tayu v'kaddish kiddusha of Kiddushin, and that you force a Kiddushin to take place. If you have a forced Kiddushin. So he says that with respect to a woman, it is clearly not considered to be a proper Kiddushin. Why is it not considered to be a proper Kiddushin? Because who asa shloka hogen, the figak asu imo shloka hogen, vavkinu rabbanan the Kiddushin minei. That because of the fact that he is compelling the woman to marry him, and that's not considered to be a proper thing, even though he's giving her a ring, He's giving her a ring. Nonetheless, since he's acting improperly, we are mafkia the kiddushin. We nullify the marriage. We say that we consider that we can declare the ring that he gave her ownerless. So it's considered as if it didn't really belong to him. And even if he was mekadesh bebia, that we were the shavi abanan lebilaso beilas zenos. One of the cases where we say afkinu abanan lekiddushin minay. The Gemara on daf mem tes says, what about this case where we say a man does not have chazaka in the property that belongs to his wife? So what does that mean? It means that if he stays on that property that belongs to his wife for 3 years, he can't claim that it was sold to him. So the Gemara says, well, that's obvious, because the reason he's on the land is because her nexei milug, he's allowed to eat the peiros of her nexei milug anyway. They say, no, we're talking about a case where he had stipulated that he's going to have no rights to her nexei milug. Aye, but he can't distance himself from something which is considered to be in his possession. So we say, no, it's not considered to be in his possession because he writes the stipulation Ba'oda Arusa before he is fully married to her, when he's only betrothed to her, because at that point in time he is allowed to remove himself from any rights towards her peros. The Gemara on Daf Mem Tes Amud Beis says that Haraya Yesh, but he would be able to bring an actual proof, right? If he could actually produce the shtar, he could produce the document, he didn't lose the shtar, he could produce the shtar that shows that the land was sold by his wife to him, so then he would be able to claim that land. So, but why don't we apply the principle that she could say nachas ruach asis levali, that I only signed the shtar because I didn't want my husband to be angry at me? We say that with respect to other properties, we say that's true with respect to most of her properties, we would say that, but not with respect to the nifsei milug, that if it's her property, she's not going to feel that he's going to be angry at her if she doesn't write the property in his favor, and therefore if she did write a shtar to him, so that means that the property really was correctly transferred by her to him, and he can bring that as a proof that it really is his property. Now, the Gemara on Daf Nun Amud Beis says, "Lo lish chazaka minixei ishto," that a man does not have a chazaka, we mentioned that already, in the nechasim that belong to his wife. So the Gemara asks a question, "Behama Rav, eishes ish tzricha limchos." But didn't Rav say that in order for the husband not to have a chazaka, she has to protest? So how can you say that he never has a chazaka? Doesn't she have to protest? So Rav says, no, she only has to protest if he actually ruins her field. If he's actually like digging things, he's digging a well or a cistern or a cave into her field, so then he's making like a real nezik into her field. So then in such a case, she would have to be mokhen. Otherwise, we would assume that he had a right to do so. But otherwise, we would say that he does not have a chazaka in the property that belongs to his wife. So now Gemara, that Nun Aleph, Amun Aleph says, Lo v'isha minikse baila, that a woman does not have a chazaka in the nechasim, in the property of her husband. So we say, yeah, that's clear, because if she's eating from the property of her husband, that's because he has to give her mizonos. So we say, no, maybe he is designating a different field for her to get mizonos. So that's why we say that it's not so pashut, but nonetheless, a husband might not generally protest if his wife uses his field, so it's not a proof that she was on his field for 3 years. But she could bring a raya. What's the raya? The raya would be that he sold the field to her and she has the shtar. But maybe the reason he sold the field to her was because he wanted her to produce money that she was otherwise hiding from him. That he wanted her to produce money that was otherwise being hidden from her. So Rav Nachman said to Rav Huna, he said to Rav Huna, you weren't with us yesterday, last night, when we were in the tchum. We were in the boundary. What's the tchum of the rabbis? The tchum of the rabbis is the base medrash. That's our tchum. It's the rabbis' tchum Shabbos. That's the base medrash, right? Mm-hmm. You weren't in there with the tchum, and we said really good things. What did we say? We said, that if a person does sell a field to his wife, then she does acquire the field, and we don't say that he was just trying to reveal money that he thought she might be hiding from him. But the Gemara in the Nun Aleph and Beis qualifies that a little bit when it says the Hilchasa, the various halachas, and says that's only if the money was not was ma'o she'ain tzmunin, if it was money that was not hidden money, that it was money that was known about. But if it was money that was not known about, then we would say it does not prove that the field was really given to his wife. He may have only sold it to her because he wanted the money that she was hiding to come to light, and therefore it's only when she pays with money that was known about that it's considered to be a good sale. Somebody receives a pikadon, they receive a deposit from a katan. So they're not really supposed to accept deposits from a katan because maybe the katan didn't really have rights to it. But if they did receive a deposit from a katan, they shouldn't give it back to a katan, because a katan can't watch it properly anyway. So what should you do? So what you should do is that yaseh lo segula. It's Gemara Nun Beis Amud Aleph. You should make a segula. You should use it, the whatever it is, so that it should not go bare, like it's money. You should use it to create a trust. What trust do you create for a katan? So Rav Chista Amar Sefer Torah. Rav Chista says that you acquire a Sefer Torah for the katan, and the katan will be able his life to use the Sefer Torah. Rav Afuna Amar Dikla Dachli Minei Tamri, that you acquire a tree. You acquire a tree like a date tree, that he'll be able to eat the date trees for the rest of his life, and therefore you have a good trust that you put into place for the katan. However, Tosu says the Chatzkila you shouldn't have accepted from him in the first place. Just if you did accept from him, so then you create this type of a trust for the katan. So the Gemara Nun Beis Amud Aleph says that if I have one of the brothers who is kind of the one who's the businessman, and everybody does everything together, but somehow he has his own assets, so it's sort of weird if he says that all these assets came from my maternal grandfather, he had a different mother than the other brothers, so he's not believed unless he really brings a proof. But if he dies, says Shmuel, that everybody agrees that in such a case, the Yisomim, we make the Taina, we make the claim on behalf of the Yisomim that it really did belong to their father, and it would be the brothers that would have to prove that it didn't belong to the father. So that sounds a little bit odd, says the Gemara, that if he himself did not have a good claim, so now his children are able to devise a claim that he himself wouldn't have been able to assert. And the Gemara asks Akasha from Rava, who when they were orphans, who the father had something that he couldn't have claimed was his, because it was the type of things like scissors that people generally loan out, and therefore the person wouldn't have been able to claim that it was his. So when it went to the orphans, the Rava said that the person who can prove that it originally belonged to him is allowed to take it from the orphans. So we see that a claim that a person couldn't assert doesn't get passed on to the Yisomim. So the Gemara concludes, Kasha. Yeah, it's a good Kasha. So the Rashbam says, well, if we have a Kasha, so that means that we're rejecting Shmuel. But he says there are some who say that we only reject an opinion when we say Tiyufta. If we say Kasha, it means there probably is a good answer. We just haven't figured out what that answer is. He says, no, Tiyufta just means it was a Kasha that came from a Tana, and Kasha means it was a Kasha that came from an Amora, but a Kasha is just as potent as a Tiyufta. However, Lemaisa, we actually do passing like Shmuel, and apparently we're not so overwhelmed by this particular Kasha. How's everybody doing? Okay, good. Daf Nun Gimel. The Gemara on Daf Nun Gimel says that if somebody is doing a kinyan chazaka, meaning that they're actually digging or building a fence in the land, and that's how they're acquiring the land, so how they acquire the land depends on whether they're doing it in the presence of the previous owner or not. If it's in the presence of the previous owner, the previous owner doesn't have to say Lech Chazek V'Kani. If it's not in the presence of the previous owner, then the previous owner has to actually say Lech Chazek V'Kani. Go out and acquire this land. Now, if the type of acquisition that's made is somebody just puts a rock in a crevice in the wall in order to prevent water from passing through and ruining the field, so says the Gemara, that's Mavriach Ari Minechse Chaveruhu. Then you're just doing a favor, like everybody is supposed to do a proper favor to save the money of, to save a person's property. That's Losamana Damriach, right? You're supposed to save a person's property. So that's called Mavriach Ari Minechse Chaveruhu. You're just stopping a lion from going into your friend's property. That doesn't count as an acquisition. It's only an acquisition when you put in a stone and that causes the water that the person would want to be there in order to irrigate their field to remain there, so then that would constitute a good kinyan chazaka, but otherwise it's not considered to be a good kinyan chazaka. Daf Nun Dalet. Shmuel says that Haiman Nizaki Zichya, that if somebody's picking up chips in somebody's field, that can also constitute a kinyan chazaka as long as they're doing it for the benefit of the field. But if they're doing it because they want the chips for firewood, that's not a kinyan chazaka. How can you tell if they're picking up the chips for firewood? If they only pick up the big chips, so that shows that they're using it for firewood. If they pick up all the chips, that shows that they're trying to clear the field, and that's considered to be a good kinyan chazaka. Rob says, if you draw a beautiful picture of, like, you know, you're a great artist, and you draw a great picture of a chaya, of an animal, or a bird, in the nechasim that belong to a ger, a convert who died without any yorshim, so then that constitutes a kinyan chazaka if you do a really, really good picture. If it's not a really good picture. It's just like you're drawing flowers. So then you got to do it like in the one Amma, says the Gemara earlier, when you're entering into the house and it has to be a large picture and it has to be more substantial. But if it's a really wonderful masterpiece, so a Picasso work of art, so then even if it's just like a tiny little bit, then it's not in the entrance way of the house, that would also be good enough. If there is a field that's being sold and you want to acquire the entire field, you have to do the King of Chazak in the entire field. Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Rav says if you just knock in, you dig in one tiny little area of the field, you plow a little bit, even though you didn't plow the entire field, you're koning the entire field, and Shmuel disagrees. Okay, Daf Nun Hey. Shmuel says, Rabba says in the name of Shmuel, there are three different statements that Shmuel made. Rashbam says they're all related. They're all related to Dina de Machusadina. One is Dina de Machusadina. Second is adverse possession. Well, we haven't really been talking about adverse possession. Adverse possession is like a secular law, which says that if a person is on a field for like 40 years or for a long period of time, even if they don't claim that the previous owner sold it to them, they get to keep the field. So he says, well, if you live in a land where there's adverse possession, and there was a goy who was on the field for 40 years, and now another Jew buys the field from him, even though originally the field had belonged to another Jew, and there's no proof that the non-Jew had purchased the field from the original Jewish owner, nonetheless, that's considered to be a good chazaka. The way the Rashbam explains it, Avarisusa, the Barsai, Amem Shanim, Vaharni, and the third rule is, so that's also based on Dina the Machusadina, and the third rule also is Vahani Zavui, the Zavin Aratiska, Zavinu Zavini. If somebody didn't pay the tax, they didn't pay their Tiska tax. What's the Tiska tax? That's the property tax. And somebody comes along and he pays the property tax, so then he's entitled to receive the property, and the property is rightfully his. That's also based on Dina de Machusadaf Nun Bob. There was Kini Knizi Vekanmoni. Kini Knizi Vekanmoni. Avraham Avinu was promised that he would inherit 10 different lands, right? So 7 of them, he got. Those are the Zayin Amamim, right? But then there were 3 more. Kini Kini Vekanmoni, that I mentioned in Brisa Ben Abisarim. So those were not given over, you know, in terms of our ownership of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore those lands, if somebody would have produce from those lands, they would not be chayev in Meiser. The Gemara in Daf Nun Vav and Bey says it's the Machlokes, Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. Let's say I have 3 sets of witnesses to testify that somebody was on the original owner's land for 3 years. That person claims that the land belongs to them. They lost the shtar, and the land belongs to them. So I don't have 2 witnesses to testify in the entire 3 years. One set testifies in year 1, one set testifies in year 2, and one set testifies on year 3, right? So does that work? So our Mishnah seems to indicate that that would work, that each one is considered to be have their own independently sufficient edus. So the Gemara says, that's not like Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva holds that that would be considered to be davar v'lo chatzi davar. The Torah says, apishnayim edim yakum davar. I need a complete unit of testimony. This is, each one is testifying on an incomplete unit of testimony, and therefore that's not considered to be sufficient testimony. So the Gemara says, okay, that's so we don't hold like Rabbi Akiva, but according to the Chachamim, what do the Chachamim rule out? When the Chachamim say, davar, what does that rule out? So the Gemara says that would rule out a case where you're testifying that a girl became an adult, that she now has 2 hairs in her pubic area, and I have 2 witnesses who testify about the front of her body that they saw hairs, and 2 that they saw 1 hair, and 2 testify on the back of her body that they saw 1 hair. So we don't combine those 2 testimonies. That's considered to be davar v'lo chatzi davar. Why don't we combine those 2 testimonies? So Tosa says, because neither one is good for anything. If 2 witnesses are testifying that somebody was on a field and they ate the food in that field for 1 year, so they have to pay back the food for that year. It's good for something. And the Rashbam says, it's not that it isn't good for anything. It's just that in the case of the witnesses, each one saw everything that they could potentially see during that year. In the case of testifying about the girls adulterated, so I don't have 1 set of witnesses that are testifying about everything they could have seen. The ones who saw the front could have seen the back, but they just didn't. The ones who saw the back could have seen the front, but they just didn't. And that's why it's considered to be chatzi davar. The Gemara on Daf Nun Zayin at one base says that if I have shutrin, that would have been mudar hanah from each other, they're not allowed to benefit from each other. They took a nether, they're not allowed to benefit from each other, so then they're not allowed to go on each other's property. And yet, nonetheless, we said that there is no chazakah that if a shutaf happens to put a behemoth, for example, on their partner's property, so we say that that doesn't constitute a chazakah that they have the right to do so. The other person let them do so. But we say when it came to hana'ah, that it's considered to be hana'ah to go on the other person's property. It is something that the other person cares about. So we say, yeah, when it comes to Isura, we go l'chumra. When it comes to mamona, we go l'kula. So mamona l'kula, that we say that a person is allowed to keep their chazakah, and therefore whatever they had before, we say that they did not give up any rights to their property. But when it comes to Isura, we say that normally partners are not makpid, but if there's a ned there, so then we're going to be worried that they're going to be makpid. Gemara says, "Otsim ena meira ospera." Pasuk in Yeshayo that a person is supposed to stay away from seeing bad, improper things. Zeshu, I'm Rabbi Kibra. Abba says, "Sheim istak menash b'shasha omodos lakvisa." This is somebody who doesn't gaze at women when they are half naked and doing the laundry. So heki dami ikidikar daka acharisa rashahu. If there is another path, so then the person's a rashi. Leka daka acharisa anasud. If there's no other place for the person to walk, what do you want? Of course, he's going to see the woman. So we say no. Even though there's no other place for the person to walk, leka daka. Nonetheless, he should try his best not to look at the women. Yes, it's true he has to go that way, but he has to try his best to kind of look the other way or look down so that he's not getting a good look or a good stare at the women who are half naked. Gemara Nun Chesam and Aleph. The Talmidei Chachamim are different from Amei Haaretz because they keep their bedrooms clean and neat. That if you look underneath their beds, so they only have one set of shoes. They have whatever set of shoes is not in season at that time. But you look underneath the beds of an Amei Haaretz, Domet Leotzer. Blus. It's a complete and utter catastrophe. It's a mess. They have a million things under their bed. So that's what characterizes Amei Haaretz. Gemara has reverse evolution over here. That when it comes to Sarah, everybody is considered to be a monkey or chimpanzee compared to Sarah's beauty. And Sarah was considered to be a chimpanzee compared to Chava's beauty. And Chava, compared to Adam's beauty, was considered to be like a kof, was considered to be like a chimpanzee. So the further you get out, so the more a person is more like an ape, and the more that you get closer to actual creation, the less people were like an ape. So that's reverse evolution. So the Gemara here has the story of Rabbi Banah, says that Rabbi Banah was very smart, that there was a woman who said that I have... There was a man who said that to his wife why aren't you more careful in your modesty? Am I lots nias be sorak is sar bnei isla velesli miavuch ela chad. So this woman was saying, this man heard his wife say to the daughter, why aren't you more modest? I have 10 children and only one of them is really from your father. You shouldn't be like me. So now he felt, oh, so only one of my children belongs to me. So he said, all of my nechasim I'm giving to the one son who's really mine. So they had to figure out who's the one son who's really his. So they went to Rabbi Banah, and Rabbi Banah said to all of the children, well, go and knock on the grave of your father until he's going to reveal who's the real son. So everybody went except for this one son. So that's how he was able to determine who is the real son. It was determined this one had midos that were of the type that he would certainly be the one the father would want to be his son, and therefore would want to give the assets to. That's the way the Rashbam explains it. So Gemara on Daf Nun Tes. An Aleph speaks about if I have a tzinor, I have a gutter, and the gutter has a pipe in it, and it is pouring out water, the chatzo kavero, to the courtyard next door. And you know what? The guy next door likes it because he wants to have the water. And now the guy who has the gutter wants to close up the gutter. So the one who's next door says, but you can't do that. I already have a right to your water. So this is a question. Is he right or is he not right? So Rabbi Yoshia says, yeah, he's right. He can stop the neighbor from closing up his gutter. Rabbi Chaima says, no, he's not right. You know, he can't stop him. Then they asked Rabbi Bisa, and Rabbi Bisa said, yeah, he can't stop him. You know what the interesting feature is? All these people are related to each other. It's the son, the father, and the grandfather. So we see that the threefold chain is not easily broken. Zer Rabbi Oshia, who is this three-part chain? Rabbi Oshia, Benosha, Rabbi Chama, Benosha, Rabbi Bisa. And yet we see that the grandson and the grandfather were in agreement, but not the father. The father was the only one who was kind of like the odd man out. So it took a couple of generations to restore things to the proper order. Okay, brings us to Daf Samech. Daf Samech. All Talmidei Chachamim. So Daf Samech. Lo yiftach adam l'chatzar shufim pesach k'neged pesach l'cholon k'neged cholon. Here's the Mishnah that memorializes what we always talk about with great pride. A person is not allowed to open up into the courtyard of partners one opening that faces the opening of the person who lives right across the way, or one window that opens up to a window right across the way. We not immediately, how do we know, says the Gemara. So the Gemara says that we know that from the prophecy of Bilam that was written by Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayisav Bilam esinav v'yaras v'yisor shechen eshatav marav v'ash ein piskei alei mekuvarin zeh lazeh. He saw that the openings of the tents were not matched up towards each other. He said, I see that these people are worthy of having the divine presence rest upon them. Okay, so there was Rabbi Yanai had a person who was had a tree that was stretching out to the Rishus Rabbim, to the public thoroughfare, and the branches were causing damage to the camels and the camel riders. So therefore, the din was that the person really needed to cut down the tree. The only problem is Rabbi Yanai himself had a tree in his property that faced out to the Rishus Rabbim. So therefore, before he judged the case, he said, I don't want to judge the case yet. Come back tomorrow. What did he do that night? He cut down his own tree. So why did he have to cut down his own tree first? Why couldn't he just cut down his own tree afterwards? So he answered, he said, why didn't he say to that person, you cut down your tree and then I'll cut down my tree? Because Reish Lakish says, that you have to adorn yourself before you adorn others. The last Gemara in Cheska Sabatim speaks about how when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, they were misaking all kinds of things, like putting ashes on the top of a chasan, and also they wanted to stop eating meat and drinking wine, and Rabbi Yeshua said, but then because meat stood for the kabanos and yain stood for the wine that was poured in the mizbeach, then you're not going to be able to drink water or eat bread because the water was used for nisuch hamayim, and the bread was used for lechem upon him, so therefore you're not going to be able to eat anything or drink anything. So it's so I'm saying this is why for 9 days a year, so that's why we have the Zekel and Mikdash for that, because that's something that the Tzibur can keep. Even then we try to make siyum so we can eat some meat and drink some wine, but and we have Shabbos, but you know, so we can keep a little bit at least for the 9 days. Okay, so Daf Samach Aleph. A person he sold like a field, and when he sold a house. He sold a room. He sold an apartment in a large house, but it was difficult for him. They didn't have like three, they did like 2B and 5C and stuff like that in those days. He couldn't really describe exactly where the apartment was, so he just gave like the dimensions of the entire building. So we don't say that the entire building is sold. That's Rabbis Din and Daf Samach Aleph Base. I'm Rabbi Abu Amok by Eskavim Beviva Gedol Avi Shemeitzlo Mitzarim Hakitzonim Mitzarim Hilchilov. He gave larger boundaries than the real boundaries. He would have had to have said, Lo Shayus Bisvini Elaine Klumi. Would have had to say, and I haven't left anything out. If he didn't say, I didn't leave anything out, so he's giving larger boundaries because it's just more convenient for him to do so, but of course he only sold him that one apartment. There are various discussions of what's included when somebody sells of various words. What do the words stand for? You sell Zira, so Zira means all of the karka that a person has. A person says, Nitsi, my possessions, so that includes all of their houses, it includes all of their slaves, all of their servants. There's a question as to what exactly is sold. So the whole discussion on Daf Samach Beis of a base, that's somebody who delineates three different boundaries and doesn't delineate the fourth boundary. So Rav says, that he acquires everything except for the fourth boundary. What does it mean he acquires everything other than the fourth boundary? So Rava has a whole discussion about, well, it merely depends whether the field and the fourth boundary is absorbed within the first three boundaries, whether it's not absorbed, how big it is. So the more it's not absorbed, and the bigger it is, the more it's not included, the more it is absorbed, and the smaller it is, the more that it is included. We'll leave it at that. And whatever's a doubt, so the Rashbam says, we leave it as the shud of the dining. So if somebody sells on the Daf Sama Gimel Amud Aleph, somebody sells the Umka Veruma, they sell a house, and they sell the depth and also the height of the house. So the Umka Veruma entitles the purchaser to dig underneath the house, the Rashbam explains. But if they say, Mitzachom Ara Arum Mekia, if they say... If they say from the depths of the land until the highest heights of the Rekia, so then it includes the Bor Bedus. Then if there's a Bor and a Dus, then if there is a well or a cistern, then the well and the cistern are included as well. Otherwise, the well and the cistern would not automatically be included in the sale of the land. And that is discussed in the Mishnah, in fact, on Daf Samach Dalet Amud Aleph, where if the Mishnah says, lo as the Bor, lo as the Dus, that the well and the cistern, what's the difference? A well is entirely dug into the ground, and a cistern has a physical boundary. It's surrounded by stone. It's surrounded by binyan, but that's the difference between a cistern and a well, but they're not automatically included, even though the person wrote, umka bruma. What if the person then, they didn't sell their cistern and their well, so they have the right to continue to walk through the purchaser's property to get to the cistern and the well that the seller did not sell? Can he continue to walk through the property? Rabbi Akiva says no, he has to buy a path, because moche bayin yofen moche. The Chachamim say he doesn't have to buy a path because we assume moche bayin ra moche, that he's not, that he's going to preserve for himself whatever he needs to preserve for himself. And the halacha, of course, is like Rabbi Akiva, which brings us to Samachay, where the Shmuel says the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. So we see the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, and there was a dispute as to whether the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva or not, that Shmuel and held like Rabbi Akiva, and Rav Nachman was Shmuel's Talmud, so he held like Rabbi Akiva. Rav Huna did not hold like Rabbi Akiva. So there's a discussion between Rav Nachman and Rav Huna, who should we hold like? So said Rav Huna to Rav Nachman that we should hold like you, because you know better, because you are always near the Dayanim, the Chasna, the Beinasiya, Viragim, Makam, and Dayanim, Meshchikid Dayanim, Ram, Aysim, Koyamek Dayanim. You are able to get Shimosh. You see every single day how the Dayanim judge cases. So therefore, you're reliable. Rav Nachman was considered to be reliable to Paskin when it comes to Dinei Mamonis cases. So therefore, since Rav Nachman's Rebbe, Shmuel, held like Rabbi Akiva, that was Rav Nachman's tradition as well. So we hold like Rabbi Akiva, the Mokeb, Ayin Yofe is Mocher. Now, the Gemara on Daf Samach Hey Amud Beis speaks about Mayim She'uvin. Mayim She'uvin means that if I have drawn water, so drawn water passes a mikveh. Here we have a machlokis between the Tosfos, between the Re and the Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam. Rashbam and Rabbeinu Tam say that Mayim She'uvin, when we see it's a problem, that means that if I have if the entirety of a mikvah would be made up of drawn water, so that would be a psul on a deraisa level. It's only on a derabanan level if it's not the entirety of the mikvah, because the Gemara comes to the conclusion over here saying that Mayim She'uvin is only midrabanan, that's Samach Vav Amud Beis. However, the Re says that even if all of the water of the mikvah was drawn water, so then it would still be midrabanan. And Rabbeinu Tam adds that if the mikvah starts out being full, so it doesn't matter how much Mayim She'uvin you add, it's not going to pass on the mikvah. It only passes when I don't have 40 sa'ah. If I have 40 sa'ah, no matter how much Mayim She'uvin I add, it's not going to pass on the mikvah. So these are some of the discussions, and the Gemara has a discussion about the type of kalim that would cause the water to become Mayim She'uvin. We won't go into that in great detail right now. So Daf Samach Zayin has the principle Sana de Arachad Hu, that if I have that the all of the land, all of the land in the world is considered to be connected. It's considered to be one big block. So if somebody, if I have a seller who has 10 fields in 10 different countries, and the purchaser is Moxic, the purchaser purchases one of the fields, so then it's considered like he's Kona all of the fields. Even though he wasn't Kona each one separately, why is that? So the Gemara says, Harfa Samud, the son of the Avachadu. It's considered like they are all connected, because all of the land in the world is considered to be connected. Sana de Arachad Hu. Very interesting principle. Dav Samaches says Rabbi Shimon that if somebody sells the city, they sell an entire city, so they sell the wells and the cisterns and the caves, and they sell all of the things that are in the city. If they say he v'chomashi besocha, they're going to add even more. So then even the metaltal and even the things that are the movable property, like the behemah and the abadim, is also considered to be sold. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that a mocher is the ear, mocher is the santer. That if you sell the city, you sell the santer. What's the santer? So here there are two different opinions that are born in the Gemara. One says Bamach Venisa. What's a Bamach Venisa? So somebody's like the county clerk or the surveyor who knows which property belongs to whom. You kind of like need him to go along with the rest of the city. And others say, no, it means the town watchman. It means the city watchman. It's another explanation of Bamach Venisa. And the second explanation of the Gemara is Bogi, that it means that you also acquire the surrounding fields, like the suburbs around the city would also be acquired, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. It says the Gemara on Daf Samach Tes. The Gemara on Daf Samach Tes has a it says that if a person is selling everything, whom mekom mashe besocha, they're selling everything within a field, so that's only the things that are required for all of the boundaries of the field. When you're drawing up the boundaries of the field, so anything which reasonably comes within the boundaries gets sold. How do we know that? So there's a gzeiras hakasuv that b'yakam stay efron, when Avram bought the stay efron, b'chol ha'etz asher b'chol givulo saviv, he bought all of the trees. And what does it say? It says asher b'chol givulo saviv. So we see that anything which needs the gavul, anything which it doesn't stand out on its own, like a giant sycamore tree would stand out on its own and wouldn't be sold, would automatically be included within the field. Rabbi Yehuda says, if you sell a field, you should write that you're also selling like the small little trees, and you're selling the hedges, and you're selling the thorn bushes, and all these tiny little things, even though they would normally be included anyway in the sale of a field. A filoach is shufar d'shtaru. Nonetheless, they should be included because it makes the shtar a shufar d'shtaru. It makes it into a better shtar, into a more beautiful star, a shufar d'shtara. Why do I need a shufar d'shtara? Because sometimes you might have a bezdin that doesn't know the halacha properly, but if you specify in the shtar all the things that are being sold, so it's a good idea. It doesn't add anything, but it's shufar d'shtara. It makes it a stronger, a more gesund, a more effective shtar. Daf Ayin says that Rav Amram asked the question of Chista. If you deposit, that you deposited an item, but you did it with a shtar, and now the person who had the item says, I returned it to you. So do we say he's believed? Because even though the one who deposited it has a shtar, which is not always the case, that the depositor has a shtar, but nonetheless, that the person who had was the one holding the goods could have said nensu. He could have said that an accident happened, and they got ruined, and he would be mehemen, and he would not have to pay anything. So maybe he should be mehemen that he returned it, even though it's sort of odd that he wouldn't have asked for the shtar back. So the answer is mehemen, that he is believed in such a case. He is believed in such a case since he has amigo that he could have said nansu, so he's believed to say that I returned it. So that was the answer to the question. Okay, the Gemara on Daf Ayin Aleph. The Gemara on Daf Ayin Aleph says that Rabbi Akiva agrees that even though normally the person who sells his field and retains the well or the cistern, the bor v'dus, does not get a pathway towards the bor v'dus. If he says chutz mielu, he adds the words in the shtar chutz mielu, so that gives him something extra that he even gets the bor and the dus. So why is that? Because here the person is not just shufa the shtar. The person is actually adding on to the lashon of the shtar. So according to Rabbi Akiva, once a person adds on to the lashon of the shtar, so then they actually it's litfuye the shtar ka'asa. It makes it a stronger. It may not only a stronger shtar, but it makes it a more encompassing shtar. It actually adds something to the shtar. You add this extra language, so he actually gets to receive more in such a case when he says chutz mielu, when he didn't need to say chutz mielu. So sometimes if a person spells things out, shufa d'shtar, and sometimes it's tfuye milsa, sometimes he gets more. You have to look at each case separately. Now, Gemara on Daf Ayin Beis, the Gemara on Daf Ayin Beis speaks about that we know that there's a stay achuza. If a person has a stay achuza and they makdish it, so then if they want to redeem it, they only have to pay 50 shkolim for every single base seller, right? That they pay for the entirety of a base seller, they pay 50 shkolim. So if 50 shkolim. And similarly, there's another din of stay achuza, that if it was sold by the gizbar to somebody else, so then the person is not able to get it back at the yovel year, but rather it goes to the kohanim. So it's important to know how to be magdir something as a stay achuza. So says the Gemara that there's one opinion, this Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, that in the event that somebody buys a field from his father and he's makdish it, and then afterwards the father dies, even though at the time he was makdish it, it didn't belong to him yet, since afterwards it would have come into his possession as an inheritance, so it's treated as a steachusin. They derive it from the pasuk vim esteam miknaso asher lo misteachusa. So when is it not a steachusa? When it's lo misteachusa, it's not reuya. So the shein reuya lio steachusa. This is reuya lio steachusa when the father dies, and therefore it's considered to have all of the dinim of a steachusa. Gemara daf ayin gimel brings us to a moker as a spina. A person sells a boat, so the what's included in the sale of the boat is the anchors. The anchors are included. What are the anchors called? They're called ugin. So what's the lashon of ugin? Ugin anchors the person, anchors the boat to shore that it can't move. So that's why we call a woman as well, says the Gemara, a woman who can't move, that she's sort of trapped, that she can't get married. She's an aguna. Halahente sabana adashir yagdalu halahente agena leviltia yos ish, like Nami said to Rus, that you're going to be like an aguna. So that's the lashon of ugin. It's like an anchor. Then we have all these seafarer stories. Rabbi Baba Kana has seafarer stories. The Maharsha says you should take them literally, but yesh kan dvarim begol, but there are deeper messages about the travails of Golos and our Kodesh Baruch who saves us from our various travails of Golos. Not only seafarer stories, but there are also stories of traveling in the Midbar. Maharsha says that that's derech hisbodedus. It means that when Rabbi Baba Kana talks about traveling in the Midbar, it means that he's being very contemplative on a Torah level. So he saw an Arab horseman, a Taya, who is considered to, who is a paradigm for somebody who is either a Chacham in Torah or a Chacham in Mada. And he said, I wanted to see the Meisei Midbar. So he showed him the Meisei Midbar, and the Rabbi Baba Kana did not count the tzitzis strings in a way, or the ties of the tzitzis strings, in order to learn exactly how it's supposed to be done. So when he came in front of the Chachamim, and they said, how come, and that you did not call Abba Chama, call Baba Chana Siksa, they called him some names. Why didn't you Ibailak Lemimni Chutin Lemimni Chulios? You should have counted the strings, and you should have counted the amount of times that it was wound around, so you would find out whether the halakha is like Beis Hillel and or like Beis Shammai. What he had tried to do was to cut a little bit of the strings, which he wasn't able to, but they said if you couldn't have cut it, then you should have at least counted it. And he also asked the Arab horseman to show him the Blue Koach, the people who were swallowed by in Adas Koach. And he was shown a place where there was some fire coming out, some smoke coming out, and Vishamis Davu Amrin, and he heard Moshe Vesaraso Emes Vehem Medayin. He heard that they were singing Kasida Shenigan, Moshe Emes Vesaraso Emes, that the people who were swallowed up by the earth because they rebelled against Moshe, they admitted that they were wrong, and Moshe Rabbeinu was correct. Okay, the Gemara in Daf Ayin Adal Nobes, the Daf Ayin Heim and Aleph, speaks about the Leviathan, about making a pseudo with the Leviathan. La'asi Lavo, and how there's going to be a Gabriel is going to make a Kenigi. He's going to have a hunt of the remaining Leviathan, the male Leviathan, and Kadosh Baruch Hu, without a Kadosh Baruch Hu's help, he would not be able to overcome the Leviathan. The Gemara on later on the daf speaks about how La'asi Lavo, there's a pasuk that speaks about Ish Bechupa, they call Echa Ve'echa Nechva Mechabus Mechupaso Shechaveo. Everybody La'asi Lavo is going to get singed from the chupa, from the canopy of his fellow, because people will be on different levels. In Olam Haba, Oila La'osa Busha, Oila La'osa Chlima, on Amud Beis, the Gemara talks about Yerushalayim in the future. It's not like Yerushalayim today. Yerushalayim today, anybody can enter. Yerushalayim of the future, Ein Olin Ela HaMizumanin La. You have to be specifically invited to Yerushalayim to get a pass to Yerushalayim, the Olam Haba. Okay, Gemara in Ayin Vav speaks about Kinyanim. Sfina nicknames from Mesiva. Sfina is can be acquired through Mesiva, through being given over. That it's very, very, it's very, very big. It's very big, and it says the Rashbam and the Rishus HaRabim, it can't be given over by Meshicha, that you can't like pull it into your possession, because the Rishus HaRabim doesn't belong to anybody, and therefore it can't be pulled into anybody's possession. But if it can be pulled through Meshicha, so then Mesira doesn't work. Rabbeinu Tam has a sharp line. He says, V'chi Meshicha Mesira Mitzvah Sein, Shein Lasel Zelam in a Mufchar. You think these are mitzvahs, that you can only do the one that's the best? So if you want to do, even if you can do a Meshicha, why shouldn't Mesira work? That it doesn't make sense to say that Mesira should only work when Mashiach can't work. The only time that we say that is with Hagbah. If something can easily be lifted up, so then we say it should be acquired only through lifting up. Okay, the Gemara and Daf Ayin Zayin there's a discussion whether Osios Niknas B'Mesira. What does that mean, Osios Niknas B'Mesira? That, let's say, I have a shtar that Reuven owes me money. Okay, Reuven owes me money. Now, I take that shtar and I give it to you. It doesn't now say that Reuben owes you money, but it says Reuben owes me money. But if you're holding on to it, presumably it's because that you now have ownership of that shtar and you should be able to collect from Reuben. Right. So there's a question as to whether that means whether just giving over the shtar would give you the ability to collect from Reuben, or whether I have to write a separate shtar saying that I am giving over kanilach v'chol shibudei, that you should acquire the shtar and all of the rights to collect from Reuben. And if I don't write you the separate shtar, then you don't acquire the debt, and that would be osted osios and not niknos b'mesira. So the Rashbam has the girsa, the osios that we paskin hilchasa osios niknos b'mesira, and the Tosfos as the girsa ain osios niknos b'mesira, and that's a running machlokes throughout the entire Masechta. The Gemara on Daf Ayin Ches, that ki amar rabbanan onav bitul mekach k'deisha das and toeh. When is it that we say that this bitul mekach, if somebody pays, like something was worth $5 and they pay $7, they pay more than 1/6 of what it was worth, that's if it's like a person could have reasonably made an error. But you pay, like you're paying for tzemah, you're paying for a yoke, you're paying the amount that you will pay for ox, you're paying like $500 or something that should cost $5. So then we say that, that's not considered to be bitul mekach if we can't prove that you were buying the other object, because some people will call the because you were buying the tzemet, and people will call a tzemet yoke, a yoke tzemet, and bakar, and you bought, you know, the tzemet, and it's worth, even though some people will call bakar tzemet as well, but not everybody. So we say in such a case, you only get the tzemet, but it's worth $500. So we say if you paid that amount, it doesn't invalidate the sale. If you gave such a ridiculous amount, so it means that you must have intended to give it as a matana. Gemara on Daf Ayin Tes. Rabbi Yossi says, "Hamakdish is a sod of a seilim olam benim gidulam." If a person sanctifies a field or a tree, so whatever grows in the field or the tree also is sanctified. Mipnei she'en gidulei hekdesh, because they are things that grow in hekdesh. So we say that we pask in that way when it comes to a sod of a ilon, but when it comes to a boar, or it comes to a dus, or a boar, or a shovach, when it comes to a well, or it comes to a dovecoat, so then we don't say that a person is also sanctifying whatever is going to come into them, because that's not considered to be gidulei hekdesh. Things don't grow. Water doesn't grow, and doves don't grow. So therefore, only with respect to sadeh do we say such a principle. Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon has a very interesting shita, in which Rabbi Eliezer says that if the boar and the shovach were sanctified when they were empty, and then afterwards they got water or doves came into it, so then that would be subject to me'ilah. That would become sanctified. So the Gemara tries to figure out, where's Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon coming from? It says, you're like Rabbi Meir, who says, Adam Machnen Dova Shloba Liolam. So he says, but according to Rabbi Meir, only says that can come Pelos Dekel, when it's like a tree, when the fruit of a palm tree, Davide the Asa, where the fruit is eventually going to come around. Honey Meyema the Asa, but who says that the water or the doves are going to come around? So Amar Rava, so Rava answered, no. Mishkak Aslav, Imayim Abayim Derech Haseva, the water is already on its way. Labor, Vyonim Abayim Derech Shabacho, and the doves are already on their way. So that would seem to indicate that even according to Rabbi Meir, who says that Adam Makna Devash Lobo Yolam, it has to be Abidi the Asu. It has to be something which is in the course of coming about. Gemara and Daf Pei, the Mishnah says that if a person sells the peos, they sell the peos, the products of the kaveris of a beehive, so then the purchaser is only allowed to take the first three notel gimel nechilim, the first three of the offspring of the bees that they would be allowed to take. And then afterwards, there would have to be sirus. There would have to be a stop, or almost like a castration of the bees, that there would not be more of the bees that would be produced from the beehive. So how are they castrated exactly? So the Gemara talks about bechardol. There Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Kanina says that because through the eating of mustard, once they eat the mustard, so that castrates them. So it says that the Ma'avah Mishmed Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Kanina, they say, lochardol misarsan, the chardol does not castrate them. It's just that since they have a bitter taste in their mouths from the mustard, so then they are that causes them to make more honey because they're not going to produce more bees since they are just so satiated from the honey, and all they're going to do is produce the honey, which is what the owner of the beehives want, is to produce more honey. So Rabbeinu Gershom says that why does the Gemara have to point out that the mustard itself doesn't castrate them? They know Rashai Lasarsan, even though they're insects, you're not allowed to castrate even insects. Well, no, you can't castrate animals. He's Mechadesh, even insects you can't castrate. The Gemara Daf Pei Aleph, that if you are Kone Shnei Ilonos Betok Shel Chavero, we have a machlokis, Tanakam and Rabbi Meir. Tanakam says maybe Ve'eno Kori, as far as Bikurim goes. Rabbi Meir Omer maybe Vikori. Rabbi Meir says that you are maybe Vikori, because even with two trees you are considered to be the owner of the field. However, if you only had one tree, so Rabbi Meir would say maybe be eno kore, and if you only have two trees, the Tanakama would say maybe be eno kore. So what's this compromise? What's this pshara? Maybe you bring me korim, but you're not kore? What, it shouldn't be one or the other? Either you bring me korim and you do the kriya psukim, or don't bring it all together. So Gemara in Dapei Avraham says, because Rabbi Meir has a suffix in the case of one tree, the Chachamim have a suffix in the case of the two trees, whether you in fact own the underlying karka or not. So that's why you may be, but you're not kore. But you still have to take Tumas and Maisos Misopek, because if it would really be Bikurim, you wouldn't have to take Tumas and Maisos. But given that it might not be Bikurim, so then you have to take Tumas and Maisos. So says the Gemara in Daf Pei Beis, why not have the person read the Psukim once they're bringing the Bikurim anyway? Amalei Rabaka Breit Rabavi, the Rabashi, Mikle Psukim in Ulikri, it's just Psukim. Just like if you pass the time of Kriyashma, you could still read Kriyashma like your Kari B'Torah. So why can't you just read the Psukim? So Amalei Mishin the Mexican Shaker, the person comes to the base of Mikdash and they're reading the Psukim, it sounds, it's like Mexican Shukim, that it looks like they're really fulfilling the mitzvah of Bikurim, but they might not be fulfilling the mitzvah of Bikurim. From Mishashia, and Mashashi says if we have them treated like regular Bikurim, they might not take the Truma Maisa that we told them that they're supposed to take the Chumra. Daf Pei Gimel says that when one is selling three trees, you definitely are entitled to the, if you acquire three trees, you definitely are entitled to the field, to the karka underneath. But if the trees are too close together, then that's not considered to be like you're really buying a field. And if they're too far apart, it's not considered like you're buying a field. So how close do they have to be? They have to be between 4 amos and 16 amos. We learned the 16 amos from a maise, that there was a maise at Bitsalmon, and where there were vineyards, there were vines, that were 16 amos away from each other. And because they were that far away from each other, the person was allowed to plant in between. And we learned also the 4 amos from another maise, Bedura the Reusa. So we learned from all of this that maise rab, says the Gemara, that when you have an actual maise where something happened and something was allowed to occur, so that's like the best way of deriving halacha. That's why we have the principle of maise rab. On the Gemara, bottom of Pei Gimel and base, I'm Rav Chista says that if somebody was cheated, if they were cheated from a sale where something was worth $5 and they were sold it for $6, for example, so they were cheated, so they're allowed, the purchaser is allowed to invalidate the sale. So what if now it's going to be worth $8? So can the mocher say, I want to invalidate the sale? So we say, no. Only Lokek decides that he doesn't want to invalidate the sale, the mocher can, because otherwise it would be Nimsa Matsinu Chote Nisker, says the Rashba. Okay, and that's how it's Paskin. Gmarm Pehe, I'm an off, talks about Abba Midos Mokhin. Four different types of situation with respect to sellers. What are the four different types? It's not really so clear from the Gemara. Rashbam says that if I have a utensil in which the things are getting measured into, it doesn't belong to either one of them, and the location where it's being measured doesn't belong to either one of them, so then it belongs to the seller until the utensil is filled up, and after the utensil is filled up, it belongs to the purchaser. If the utensil belongs to one of them, and it is in a place which belongs to, and it is in one of these places, where it's a place that Rishus HaRabim or Chassid that doesn't belong to the two of them, so then we say that it would be Rishon Kana, that the Lokeach would, if the utensil belongs to the Lokeach, then everything that goes in he immediately acquires. If the utensil belongs to the Mocher, so then the purchaser doesn't acquire it until he actually pulls it away into his possession. Third, Rishus is if it is taking place in the Rishus in the domain of the purchaser. So then it doesn't really matter who the utensil belongs to. Once there's an agreement that the merchandise is going to go to the purchaser, it goes to the purchaser. And if the fourth is that if it's in the domain of the seller, then it doesn't really matter who the utensil belongs to. The purchaser does not acquire the merchandise until he actually lifts it up, or he lifts it out of the Mokas domain into his own separate domain. Daf Pei Bav kind of proves this point with respect to the domains at the beginning of the daf, but it also has another very important principle that we mentioned earlier, that Dvarim Shedarkan Le'agbia Be'agba In Mashikolo. Anything which normally is so light that it could be picked up, a person only acquires by picking it up and not by drawing it out from one possession to another possession, because anything that can be acquired through Hagba should be acquired through Hagba. We have a case in Pei Bavim and Beis, which a person is dragging out Peros, and we say that that the way he acquires it is through Meshicha, through taking the Peros, dragging it into his possession. So why is that not done through Hagba? It's pretty light. So we say, B'shlifi Rabbi, we're talking about large, bulky bundles of fruit, and that's why we don't say that it has to be done only through Hagba. Gemara Daf Pei Zayin Amud Aleph says that when merchandise is being sold, so there's an obligation that every single last drop, by good to the last drop, has to be dipped out, and you have to wait 3 drops. But the chenmani, but a person who's a storekeeper, is very busy, he doesn't have to wait for the 3 drops to drop out, and otherwise it's still considered to be okay. Gemara and Daf Tzadi Ches, that the Mishnah and Daf Tzadi Zayin Amud Beis, it said that if a person sends his son, it could be a katan, to a merchant, and then the merchant gives the merchandise to the son in the utensil that was sold, so then in the event that the child on his way back, he breaks the pitcher, so then the chenmani is chayev. Why is the chenmani chayev? The child broke the pitcher. It wasn't even the didn't belong to the chenmani. So the Gemara says that Amar Rav and Daf Pei Ches Amud Aleph Ani Vari Shebechabur Tagaminu, that I and the other and the person who was like the best guy in our chabur, Rabbi Zera, we explain that the merchant, when he had taken the pitcher to put the merchandise in the pitcher, he had used it to measure for other people, and therefore he borrowed it. So the Tanakama, who says that the merchant is chayev, holds that he's considered to be a gazlan, he's a shol shlomidas. Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnah, who says he was potter, says he's considered to be a shol, so once he returned it, and therefore he would not be liable. Okay, we'll try to move along a little bit more quickly. Daf Peites. Taf Peites says Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says that there were certain types of instruments that were used in order to scale down the merchandise as it was being sold, and you could use it in such a way that would be cheating others. Like you purchase it in a way in which you use in which you are scrapping away only a little bit when you're buying it, and where you're scrapping away a lot from the merchandise when you're selling it, so that you're buying more and selling less, and a person's not allowed to have utensils of this type where they would be causing this type of unfairness. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, Oilim Omer, Oilim Lo Omer. When I describe these different practices that you have to abstain from, so I'm giving people ideas. So therefore, Im Omer, Shema Yomadur Amai. And if I mention it, maybe those people who are deceitful will learn how to deceive others. Lo Omer, Shema If I don't say it, then the Ramayim, the cheaters, will think that we don't know what they're doing. So therefore, what's the final analysis? Should you mention these things or not mention it? That you should say it, because it's we say Yisharim Adake Hashem, and therefore it is proper to share this information, because we leave it to people on their own to decide whether they're going to be the Yesharim or whether they're going to be the Poshim. Daf Tzadi says that we try to make sure that the various measurements, the various different types of chelim that are used for measurements, be far apart from each other in terms of their volume, because if they're too close to each other, like within like 1/4 of each other, then people might confuse the different types of measures. However, we said when it comes to Shlishis and Hahin, Revia Sahin, measures for oil and wine and the like, so we say those you are allowed to have because kimen davar b'mikdash lo gazur b'rabbanan. Since those existed in the base of mikdash, that you had those markers in the base of mikdash, therefore we say that that's okay. So maybe mikdash nami ligzur. Maybe we shouldn't have had them in the base of mikdash to have those markers that were so close to each other, and they were so they were so similar, and therefore you might mix up one for the other. So we say no, we're not worried about that. Why are we worried about that? Because Kohanim Zrizinim. Because Kohanim can be very trustworthy and punctilious because they're extremely careful with respect to what they do. You don't have to worry about them. The Gemara in Daf Tzadi Aleph talks about why Elimelech, Amaklan, Mechuyon were all punished. Why were they punished? Because even though there was a famine, they shouldn't have left Eretz Yisrael. They were the leaders. And then it speaks about the story of Rus and Boaz, or Amarav, Ibsen and Boaz. Ibsen was a shofet, is mentioned. He's mentioned... and shoved him. So he was the same as Boaz. And the day that Boaz's wife died is when Naomi came back with Rus. What did an Ifson who had 60 children, 30 boys and 30 girls, and he made 2 sudos for each one, a total of 120 sudos, but he didn't invite Manoach to any of them because he said, Kuna akara b'may parali. This barren mule, he's not going to be able to pay me back because Manoach didn't have any children. Eventually, Manoach had Shimshon, right? But nonetheless, at that time, he didn't have anybody, and we see that Ifson lost all of his children, but eventually he was okay to be able to marry Rus, and from him came, of course, the dynasty of David HaMelech. Daf Tzadi Beis says, in the Mishnah, this is the beginning of Amokah Peres, Zeroni Gina, Shein Nacham Chai Bachar Yusan, that if I have Zeroni Gina, I have seeds that are not edible, and that they're planted in the ground, and they don't catch, so then the seller is obligated to reimburse the purchaser. The Gemara talks about how if you mock a shore, the kaveh, or sanakon, you sell an ox to your fellow, and it turns out the ox is a goring ox. So Shmuel says that the person who sold it can say, "I sold it to be shechted. I didn't necessarily sell it to be, I did it to be used on a day to day basis, and therefore it's considered to be a valid sale, even though some people do in fact buy it for plowing purposes, l'radya." So the Gemara says we paskin like Shmuel; it's a valid sale because we've been in Hokin Bimamon Achara Rov. When do we go after Rov? Only be Sur Bimamona. Low. When it comes to money, we don't go Basar Rov. Gemara in Sadi Gimel says we also don't follow Umdenus. That Rabbi Acha Omea Gamal Aloche Benam Gamal, and him said Gamal Horog Bitsido. If I have a camel that appears to be like in heat, and there's a dead camel next to it, we don't assume that this is the camel that killed. And I'm sorry, the Rabbi Yaka says we do assume it's the camel that killed, but the Chachamim say no. We don't say that way. And the halacha presumptively is like the Chachamim and not like Rabbi Yaka, that we don't follow umdenus when it comes to mumdenus. Okay, we're on Daf Tzadi Dalid. Daf Tzadi Gimel Amud Beis says that if you sell peiros l'chavero, mekabel la rova tinopis l'sa'ah, that the purchaser is expected that 1/24 of it, or so, or whatever rova tinopis l'sa'ah is, I think it's about 1/24, is going to be bad, and therefore that is not grounds to invalidate the sale. But Rafuna says that if it turns out that more than that volume are fruit that went bad, in balanapos menape es kulo. So then, if the purchaser goes through it and discovers more than that amount, so then he's entitled for reimbursement of everything that was bad. Not only the amount above the normal amount that goes bad, but he's entitled to get everything back. Why is he entitled to get everything back? Because clearly it's either knas, that the seller sold merchandise that was worse than what is normally supposed to be the merchandise, or since he had to be tareach, he had to work so hard in order to take out all of the bad fruit, so tarach bekule, he had to go through all of it, so therefore he's entitled to a discount for all of it. Whole question as to whether we paskin like Rafuna, at the very, very end, the Gemara goes on with a very long discussion and comes to the conclusion that we do paskin like Rafuna. The Gemara on Daf Tzadi Hey says that when person buys casks of wine, so for every like 100 or so of casks of wine, there are 10 or so that are allowed to be bad, but that is less the case when the person says that I am selling not just Martep Zeb, but Martep, I'm selling a cellar, sounds like a good wine cellar, and I'm selling it for mikvah, I'm selling it to use for dishes, that you're going to use it as seasoning for dishes, then the wine is expected to last longer, so the various variations based on the lashon that a person says, but that's the general principle. However, that's offset a little bit in Daf Tzadi Vavim and based by another principle, which is Chama Kasvei Demari Shavar, that if the way it explained by Tosfos, if the way in which the merchandise, the wine, is sold is in such a way that it is moved a lot by the purchaser, then we say that maybe the purchaser's moving of the merchandise is what caused it to go bad. But if it sold the mikvah, this says Tosfos that there would be we would be more strict with respect to the seller. Here the Gemara says that any beer that comes out of dates, that comes out of barley, is we make the bracha of shahakoniyah bidvaro. Tosu says it's because it's all zeya, that the zeya pay must make a shahakoniyah bidvaro. Daf tzadi zayin am an aleph on the bottom, it says we only say kiddush yom and yayin aroyin lenasek agam mizbeach, wine that is suitable for libation. What does that come to exclude? So the Gemara comes to the conclusion and excludes wine which has a bad smell, rakva, or wine which was left out all night, it was megula, and therefore maybe a snake a bit from it, even though you strained it, and we know it's okay, it doesn't satisfy the prerequisites of akribe o nala pechasecha. Daf tzadi ches speaks about if a merchant sells an agent to sell the merchandise in a place called Baal Shafat, where the wine is sold for an expensive price, but he doesn't allow the person to sell the wine beforehand, and it turns out that the wine is sold at a very low price, so the owner of the wine has to suffer the entire loss because he did not allow the merchant to sell it earlier. The Gemara in Amud Beis says there are certain things that you're never supposed to do. One of the things that you're never supposed to do because it's considered to be uncouth, so one is to live like in your mother-in-law's house, and a second is that you should not orech who is maybe orech, machnis orech. One guest is not allowed to bring another guest to the host without asking the host first. And the third is meishav dara b'terem yishma, somebody who answers before they listen to everything which is said to them. You have to listen to everything before you render an answer. Daf Tzadi Tes speaks about how the Keruvim were facing in the Beis HaMikdash. So there are two different psukim that seem to contradict each other. One says, Pneim ish el achiv, and one says, Pneim labayis. So one opinion says, well, it was Bismansha, you saw Otsim and Sona Shamakam, the Kumim faced each other. Bismansha ain't Otsim and Sona Shamakam, the Kumim didn't face each other. And the other opinion says that the Kruvim faced away from each other as a general rule, and that was even when Otsim and Sona Shamakam. Aye, but it says that the Kruvim did face each other, so it means, and this, they quote Uncle Isagir for this, that they did a Maisa Tzatzuim, that they kind of like, you know, tilted their heads a little bit towards each other, like a Talmud who's leaving from his Rebbe. He doesn't want to turn his back completely on his Rebbe. This Gemara in Daf Tzadi Kuf speaks about that this was the Mishnah, that a person who had a shortcut that went through his house and he tried to create a different shortcut on the side of his house, so we say that doesn't work because it's going to be less convenient for the people who are on the other side, so therefore both shortcuts are still considered to be in effect. And the Gemara, in the course of the discussion, quotes Rabbi Eliezer, who says that the people can acquire like a passageway just by walking on it. Chachamim say, no, they have to effectuate some sort of a chazakah, unless it's a shvil shakramim. It's like a path of vineyards where the way in which it's generally used is just through walking on it. And that also affects how we interpret the pasuk with Avraham Avinu, Hukumi Salek Barasa Akar L'Rachma Ki L'Chayet Nena, where the Chachamim say that was because of Chavivusa de Avraham, that it wasn't that it was an acquisition of Avraham just by walking on it, which Rabbi Lesser would say, but it was to make the land more in Avraham's eventual possession, that he should be considered a Yoresh of the land when the time would come. The Gemara on Daf Kuf Aleph is speaking about tales from the crypt, speaking about your somebody wants to sell a graveyard, how many crypts are sold together with a graveyard, the machlokas, how many graves get carved out from between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim, and the Gemara says that it all depends on the quality, it all depends on the quality of the soil. If the soil is soft, then the graves have to be further away from each other. If it's hard, they can be closer to each other. The Gemara in Amud Beis speaks about how you need less distance if it's a shallow, narrow grave, but nifli, special graves that were made for stillborn children, for, you know, children, or even for children who were presumably aborted or miscarried late in the pregnancy. We see sort of the original origin of this notion of having the graves for Nephilim. for the children who was kind of like the miscarried fetuses and the like. Gemara and Daf Kuf Beis has the Pythagorean theorem, but it doesn't seem to work so perfectly. Speaks about that if somebody could tell that there's a kever in the area, they should check up until 20 amos. But according to the Chachamim, you would have 18 amos area, and according to Rabbi Shimon, you would end up having 22 amos area. So how do you get 20? So say it's going according to the Chachamim, but one of the areas is checked according to its hypotenuse, and since it's 4 by 6, therefore you get 8, except you don't really. So it's really 7 and change, but it's 7 and change, still you can round off to 20, presumably. What's interesting is that there are three words, Balkasona, 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 which means diagonal, 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 that are all aligned perfectly vertically with each other at the very end of Kuf Beis Amud Aleph, the three last lines of Kuf Beis Amud Aleph. Interesting Gemara trivia. Yeah. Okay, Daf Kuf Gimel. Daf Kuf Gimel speaks about somebody sanctifies their field, B'shas HaYovel. They sanctify their field, but if there were rocks, they were 10 tefachim high, or there were Nekayim, and there were ditches, and with 10 tefachim that were deep, and they were filled with water, so they don't automatically get sanctified with the field. They have to be evaluated in their own right. This would be that would have to be evaluated separately. Okay, fine. Daf Kuf Dalet. Daf Kuf Dalet says that if you're selling a field and you say you're selling a base core, and you're selling mida b'chevel. So if it's mida b'chevel, it's very exact. So even if it's off by a little bit, so then the sale is canceled. If you say hein cheser, hein yeser, so then even if your piches rova l'sa'ah, even if for every single sa'ah you're off by a rova hakav, so that's still considered to be okay. That ends up being a 7.5 kavin for the entire base core. And that would be okay if the seller gave too much. The seller has the right of going to the purchaser and saying, well, the amount that I gave, if it was a little bit too much, that it's not going to be worth it for me to take that amount back per se, but why don't you just pay me extra for it? Okay, Daf Kuf Hey. Daf Kuf Hey says that let's say there's a contradiction in a person's lashon. They use one lashon to indicate that it's an exact sale, and another lashon indicates that it's in cheser and yeser. So Benana says you go after the lashon achron. The Gemara, however, says, quotes Shmuel as saying, you go after whatever's the pokus of the shonos, meaning whatever would give the lokeach the least, that the yana moker, the seller, always is yado al ha'oyona, because he's muksak, he's the one who's currently holding on to the field. Gemara on Daf Kuvav says that if you expand it and you say that I'm selling the field according to certain boundaries, so then it's the margin of error can be 4 times as much, because what the person is really selling is the field that they're showing as opposed to the exact measurements that they are describing. The Gemara on Daf Kuvav and Bay speaks about a king in Goro. About how if you have Ach and Shechalku, brothers who are splitting a field, so even as long as the goal goes to one of them, so all of them acquire however the goal falls out, if one person gets one section, so then the other one would get the other section, just like Eretz Yisrael was divided with goal. So we said, but it's not exactly like Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael was divided also with Kalpi and Urim Metumim, and we don't have all of those things. So Avashi says, yeah, but it's the Hana that they're listening to each other, and then they have some sort of a mechanism of dividing the land, so that causes them to be satisfied with the Chaluka Ayyadei Goral. And the Gemara goes on to say that if it turns out that you have two brothers that split the land based on Goral, and then if there was a third brother that comes along they didn't know about, so then Butla Machlokis, the Goral has to, and only works, this Goral, which has some sort of like a divine providence, like the Kavos Yar writes in the Tshuva, it only works when all of the elements are properly in place. But if something wasn't properly in place, then we say Butla Machlokis. If you have the brothers on Daf Kuf Zayin and Aleph that they split a field and then the Baal Kof comes along and he takes the portion that went to one of them, so then we also say Butla Machlokis. Not that it turns out that only this brother is responsible to the Baal Kof. No, everybody's responsible to the Baal Kof. So therefore, Butla Machlokis. Gemara Daf Kuf Ches begins about the laws of inheritance of Yesh Noklin. So the first example that's given is how a father inherits a son. But that's not like very nice. We don't want like fathers to inherit sons, because that's not like the order in which we want things to happen. So why does it start that way? So the Gemara says, because it's derived from a drasha. And I the asya le mi drasha chavivale. What's the drasha? The drasha is from the word she'ero. When it's a temis nakalaso, the she'ero akarov ilav, and she'ero we learn is the father, and that teaches us that a father inherits from a son. And why does, normally speaking, a son inherit before a father? Let's say somebody dies and that person left a father of their own and a son. So why does the son come first? So we say that, and why does the son come before others? So we say, why do we, a karov kodem, the son comes before anybody else? Because we say, why does the son come before a brother, I should say? So the son comes before a brother of the father, and when the father dies, because the son has yield on the brother, on the father. Then when the father, that if somebody is given an Amma Iviya and the father doesn't marry her, so then the son can marry. So since there is such an idea of, that the son can come and Makom Ha'av, so therefore, that shows us that the first one to inherit from a father is a son, right? Okay. Next, Daf Kuftes. Daf Kuftes says that we have that she'er. We bring various proofs that she'er is a father, and that they is a she'er avicha hu. So we say maybe it means the mother. So we say no, because only mishpachas av is kuya mishpacha, not mishpachas ein. So we try to bring a kasha from a reference to mishpacha with Yonasan ben Gershom ben Menashe, where there's a reference to mishpacha. So we say that it's not where he it seemed to, even though he was from the mishpacha of Levi, is referred to as Yehuda. So we say no, it's the words, it doesn't necessarily mean that he was from. It doesn't necessarily mean exactly what it says. Everything is messed up in the pasuk because it says Yonasan ben Gershom ben Menashe, and the reality is that his grandfather wasn't Menashe, it was Moshe Rabbeinu. So why then does it say Menashe? Because he did a Maisa Menashe, because he was a like a priest for Avodah Zarah purposes. So why do we say Menashe, not Moshe? So he said Mikan she tolines hakalkola be mikolkol, that this shows that that whenever there's a kalkola, so we find somebody who is mekulkol, somebody who is himself disrepudiated to be the to attribute that kilkol, to attribute something that is untoward towards an untoward person. Daf Kuf Yud says that there are three proofs that the daughters don't inherit in the case that there are sons. It says ish ki amus uvein ein lo time ein lo bein ayesh lo bein bein kodim. If there is a son, the son comes before the daughter, and the daughter does not inherit. And we see also from the Melos Tzlavkot, who said only because there were no sons that they should be able to inherit, but otherwise they do not inherit. The Gemara in Daf Kuf Yud Aleph proves that not only is there inheritance from a father, but also from a mother. It says kol bas yoreshes nakala mi matos bnei Yisrael tu matos, that we see from here that one inherits from a father and one inherits also from a mother. The Gemara in Daf Kuf Yud Beis shows that there is a that a person that a person inherits the mother. Where do we see from here? Because we see that Yair, who is a son of Segub, had certain lands that were not attributed to Segub. So how in the world did he get that? So he must have gotten that because Yair married a woman, and the woman died, Mesa Viarsha, and he inherited her. Presumably his father had died first. Okay, so now we go to Daf Kuf Yud, because otherwise a husband inherits the wife. Daf Kuf Yud Gimel shows that a Baal is not Notel Baroi Kivim Muksak, when a husband inherits from his wife, he only inherits the things that were already in the wife's possession. But if the wife died before, let's say, her father died, and she was going to inherit from her father because there were no brothers, so that's not something that the husband would inherit. And there's a raya from Pinchas, who had certain things that didn't belong to Elazar, and that's how we can explain that came about. Gemara on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel on Beis Kuf Yud Dalet has the pasuk by Yabiyom Anachiloes Banav to show that Nachla is only, the din of Nachla can only be during the daytime, like it says the Chukas Mishpat, that it's like a din, and therefore if I have three people who come in and they hear our person is bequeathing his assets during the daytime, they can become Dayanim, but during the nighttime when they couldn't sit Bedin, they would be Edim, and then they couldn't sit as Dayanim in that case, because we have a principle ain't a maid nase, that ain't aid nase dayan. And both Rashbam and Tosso say that's referring to an aid hamaid. Somebody who already testified can also be a dayan in the same matter. Tosso points out that if it's a durabanan, however, then even an aid hamaid can be a dayan. It's only in a daraisa that we don't say an aid hamaid can be a dayan. Only a deraisa that it cannot be. So Rabbi Yosef has the second of his three laws that we paskin like him, even though he argues like with Rabba. There were three times that we paskin like Rabbi Yosef against Rabba. One is Sadeh, that was Sadeh de Beimer Marion, and the second is Asik, which is Rabbi Yosef says that if there is a kinyan, that a person makes a kinyan, when can they be chosef for making the kinyan? So says Rabbi Yosef, kosman shasukin ve'oso inyan. And we pass them like Rabbi Yosef with respect to that rule as well. The Gemara in Daf Kuf Tes Vav says that if a person leaves even a grandson or a great grandson, or a great granddaughter that comes from a great grandson, so all of them would be included in Nachla. How do we know that? Because it says Uvein Ein Lo is written with a Yud. It could have been written without a Yud because May Ein. We can learn May Ein Bilam, that you can have a word Ein without a Yud. So the Yud teaches me Ayein Alav. Okay, so we have 10 minutes to cover 60 plot. Okay, no problem. So now we have Daf Kuf Tes Zayin. Daf Kuf Tes Zayin. The Gemara says that somebody who doesn't leave a son to inherit him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry at him. Yom Evra Hayom Mahu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry. There's a machlokes who says that one opinion says that's if he doesn't leave a ben. One another opinion says doesn't leave a talmud. We bring a raya that's Rabbi Yochanan, who says that the talmud is more important because Rabbi Yochanan himself had all of his sons dying. He said Den Gamei Dasira Beer. This is the tooth of my 10th son who died, said Rabbi Yochanan. So it must be he was the one who said that the main thing is that you should leave a talmud. Gemara Daf Kuf Yud Zayin has the three way machlokes. Was Eretz Yisrael given to those who left Egypt at the age of 20, those who entered Eretz Yisrael at the age of 20, or to both? The Gemara in Daf Kuf Yud Ches says that Bnei Yosef screamed. Why did they scream? Why were they upset? And Yosef and Yeshua, they were upset, according to the opinion that says that the land was divided to the Yotzei Mitzrayim. So we can understand they were upset because it wasn't them. But if according to the one that says they went to the Bayi Aretz, why were they upset? They were upset because there were a lot of them who were not yet 20 years old. Okay. Gemara and Daf, and therefore they wouldn't get. They were Tefalim. Gemara and Daf Kuf Yud Tes says that how is it that the Benos Slavkot, it says they were entitled to the Chelek Bechora of their father Tzlavchot. Why were they entitled to the Chelek Bechora of their father Tzlavchot? I was Ra'oi, and the Bechora doesn't, because it was Eretz Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael had not yet been given out. So Rabbi says, Eretz Yisrael Mukzak, see, Eretz Yisrael was considered as if it was already Mukzak, as it says, V'nasati Osah Lachem Morasha. It was already given like an inheritance, like we read earlier about how Avram was told the Chot that Kumis Alek Va'aretz, that this was making it a Yerusha for him. The Gemara in Daf Kuf Chaf says that the Benos Slavkot were described in different orders. They were described in one order based on their age, another order based on their Chokmah. We learn from this, B'yeshiva Lechaka Chokmah, that there were different orders for different types of things. If it's a yeshiva, it's like a learned type of environment, so then the person who has the greater Chokmah goes first. If it's a mesiba, a party, a wedding, the person who's the Zakin should go first. And Ravashi says that's assuming that the person is a Maflik B'Chokmah, he's a tremendous Chokmah, or Mumin Maflik B'Zikin, in the case of Zikin, he's a tremendous Zokin. What if there's both a tremendous Zokin against a tremendous Chokam, etc., etc.? So the Rashbam goes through all the different scenarios. Daf Kuf Kuf Aleph has what? Daf Kuf Kuf Aleph says that Ben Azay Omer Mordei Hashem Nemu Hafaras Nedarim Lo Nemu. That says Mordei Hashem, but it doesn't say Hafaras Nedarim. So what is that talking about? So what that means is the Mordei Hashem there, when it speaks about Kiddush HaKodesh, so Moshe was told you need Mumkin, you got to do it together with Aaron, there has to be Mumkin. But when it comes to Rosh Hamatos, when it comes to Hafaras Nedarim, as long as you have three people, it could be any three people, and they could do Hafaras Nedarim. It says Rosh Hamatos, so Rosh Shematas just means that you can have a Yochin Mumche, that if you have one big expert, he could do a Tarsin Dorim by himself. But if you're doing it with three, which is learned from the Gzeir Shavah, Zeh Dover, from Shkut Echutz, and Dafkov Kof Amun Beis, so then any three people will suffice, like it was indicated with respect to Shkut Echutz, that any three people would suffice. Kof Kof Amun Beis says Tu B'Av was very, very special. It was called Yom Tov Magol. This is the day, a lot of happy things happened that day, but one of the things was that they no longer had to be chop wood in order to bring as the firewood on the Mizbeach, because the wood was no longer good after that point in time, so therefore they were able to throw away the hammers that were used to chop the wood, or throw away the axes, and it says Rabbeinu Gershon, there was a big celebration because they had more time afterwards. Then more time afterwards to learn Torah. Daf Kof Kof Beis says, how was the land divided? Was the land divided, Israel divided among the people per capita, or was it divided among the Shvatim? So the Gemara brings various proofs that it was divided among the Shvatim. Gemara on Daf Kof Yud Kof Kof Gimel Amid Aleph asks the question, when a Bechor gets Pishnayim, does that mean that everybody, that he gets twice the portion that each individual person gets? So if there are four children, that means that we divide it five ways, and the Bechor gets 2/5 and the others get 1/5? Or does it mean that in totality he gets twice as much as everybody else combined? So the Gemara brings various proofs that he gets just a double portion, like it says with respect to Yosef, Shechem Echad Al Achecha, or Ephraim and Menashe, Kiruvein Meshimon Yuli, then it means that they just get a total of two portions, but not to twice as much as everybody else. The Gemara Ardaf Kav Dalet Amid Aleph says that the Bechor, because of the fact that the Chelek Bechor is called Lases Lo, it's described as a Matana, therefore like any Matana, he can turn it down. Normally a person can't turn down an inheritance, but a Bechor can turn down his Pishnayim. Gemara on Daf Kuf Kuf Hey says there was a case of a man who said, I want my possessions to go to my grandmother, and afterwards I want it to go to my heirs. So the grandmother had a the person had an heir. He had a daughter, and the daughter was married, and the daughter died during the grandmother's lifetime. So the question was that when the grandmother died, should the inheritance at that point go to the husband of the daughter, or go to a different heir, like a brother, for example, who was, you know, would be less of an heir than the daughter, but, you know, would the husband not get? So Rav Anan says that the husband does not get, and the reason is not because of his tam. His tam was that it's considered to be a subsequent inheritance, but that's not really the reason. The reason is because a husband does not inherit b'roi kivim muksak, but if, in fact, the daughter, before she died, would have had a son, or a daughter, would have had a child, so then the inheritance would have gone to them. The Gemara in Gedav Kof Kof above, Amin Aleph says, Bechor Shemicha Micha, that if I have a Bechor who says that I don't want you to do I want you to divide the assets and not to do work on the assets, but they do work on the assets, so then he's entitled to a Pishnayim even with respect to the work that's done on the assets, unless it's a complete Shinoi. Like, for example, if the work that they do is that they cut the grapes, so he's still entitled to the Pishnayim even though there was some cost involved with cutting the grapes. But if they actually crush the grapes and now the grapes are wine, it's different, so he doesn't get Pishnayim with respect to that. If the Bechor agrees to accept just one regular portion is considered like he's Mebater, like he gives up his Bechor portion, he can be Mebater even before the Chalukah, because Yesh the Bechor called him Chalukah. If a person, the Mishnah on Daf Kof Kavav Amud Beis says that if a person on their if a person stipulates during their lifetime that they do not want their son who's a Bechor to get Pishnayim, or for one of their sons to inherit, so that doesn't work, because it's Masne Amash Kasu B'Torah, it simply doesn't work. The Gemara indicates it doesn't work because it's not proper Mechila, but most of the Rishonim say that no, that's really a Melitza, that even if there would be Mechila, it just doesn't work. It's Masne Amash Kasu B'Torah, whole discussion in Rishonim. Gemara in Daf Kof Kof Zayin and Aleph speaks about some of the limitations that we apply to Tumtum. For example, that a Tumtum that turns out to be a Zohar doesn't get Pishnayim, because you have to be a Bechor, Ve'ayah, Habena Bechor, Lasniyah, that he has to be a Bechor when he's born. He has to be clear that he's eligible to be a Bechor. So if at the time that the Bechor is born, nobody can tell because he was mixed up with like other children, you couldn't tell which one was the Bechor, he's only recognized afterwards, so then he doesn't get Pishnayim. If he was Hukul the Besof Nisarvo, if it was clear who the Bechor was, but then afterwards the children, it's like you had twins, they got mixed up afterwards, so then they could just write a Harshah that between, say, there were five children who were born afterwards, so between the two of them, since it was Hukar at the time who the Bechor was, so somebody's entitled to it, so those two people can say, we'll just take the second Chelek, the Pishnayim, and we'll split it up between the two of us, we'll be Kosev Harshah, Zeh Lazeh. The Gemara in Daf Kuf Kuf Ches speaks at the bottom of Kuf Zayinu and Beis, speaks about a case of Rabbi Abba who said to Rav Yosef, there were a lot of cases of Shaklei Rabbi Abba and Rav Yosef Bachama, different rulings. Rabbi Abba sent to Rav Yosef Bachama that we hold like. So one of the cases is that somebody says to his chaver, you stole my slave. The other one says, no, I didn't steal it. And he says that you gave it to me as a gift. And he's already been holding on to it for 3 years. So he asks the chazak, he doesn't have to hold on to the shtar. And really, he could have left it at that. But then he says, if you really insisted it's your slave, you could take a shvua and then you can have him back. Or you can, if you insisted I never really bought it from you. He didn't have to say that. But once he says that, so we pass him like the chachamim, that he's bound by that. He can't retract from that commitment anymore. And therefore, if the other person, this is a case of etain, so I'm basically going to give it to you. If you take a shvua, so then the person is held to that, to this case of etain, that he was mekamel upon himself, that he'll allow himself to be bound by the other person's shvua. Daf kuf kuf tes has the a case where a person is giving in his lifetime, he's giving to somebody what he has, when he uses a lashon matana and a lashon yerusha. So as long as he uses a lashon matana as well, so then it's considered to be a valid transfer. What if he's giving to two people and he uses both the lashon matana and a lashon yerusha? So Reish Lakish says he has to formulate it in such a way that the lashon matana would be going on both people and on both fields, and it gives you a special formulation as to how that would work. The Rashbam says that's only if it's la'akar k'dei b'dibur, if it's p'tok k'dei dibur. So then whenever he said if he used the lashon matana, so then that's considered to work for the yerusha as well. The Gemara in Daf Kuf Lamed has the halacha of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says that if a person says Amisha Roy Liyorsho, Tzvarav Kayamin, that if a person says that I only want one of my five sons to inherit me, so then that would work. But if he said with me, so, or let's say he had five daughters, he said only one or two of the daughters to inherit me, but not the other three, so Dvarav Kayamin. As long as the person he said it about is Misharoi Lo the Yorsho. But if he says that I want somebody who's not an heir altogether, or not would not be in the first line of heirs to inherit, so then that wouldn't work. It would only be the people who would otherwise inherit, and he says that I'm going to give to some, I'm going to give more to some and less to others, so that would work. He learns that from a pasuk, V'ayya b'yom hanakilo es panav, hatoen nasna reshus la'av, l'ha as long as they are in the line of inheritance. The Gemara in Daf Kuf Lamed Amud Beis says that the halakha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and there are two different versions, whether they say Hora, that either the halakha is like Rabbi Yochanan, or whether the formulation is, or that Rebbe said is Hora, that he was Hora like Rabbi Yochanan. Hora means that he made a maise, and maybe a maise is stronger. On the other hand, you can also misinterpret a maise, so therefore maybe saying halakha la maise is stronger. The Rashbam launches on a whole discussion here about how whenever the Gemara gives like a final halakha psuka that comes in the Gemara itself, that's considered to be halakha la maise, and it's binding because Ravina Ravashi sof hara hayu, very important discussion from the standpoint of how we get to halakha la maise and how we view Gemara in general, which is an important cornerstone principle of really paschaling halakha and Jewish law. So that's very, very important. Okay, we will do a part two in Mitzvah Hashem.